Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. The May 9th, 2016 regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge to your left.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Moak, please call the roll.
Mr. Bojinski?
Here.
Mr. Buckle?
Here.
Mrs. Clark? Yes. Mr. Alter?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mrs. Here. Just a couple of things. Welcome, everybody. Also, thank you for those who are here being live-streamed. We welcome you tonight. I did get a microphone for board members in case we can't hear you, Mr. Bojinski. That quiet voice. And please let us know in the back of the room, truly. If you can't hear us, do this to me or hands up, or because that means that the people watching live stream can't hear us either. So if we're going to do this, we want to try and do it well. So thank you for that. All right, superintendent reports.
Are you going to make an adjustment to the...
Oh, yes. And a quick adjustment to the agenda tonight. I'd ask some board members up here. Under other, which is at the very end of the meeting, we have a Board of Education self-evaluation summary. And we're going to move that up under board reports. Got some consensus to allow more people to hear that and be available at the meeting for that. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. Okay, under superintendent reports, first I would like to welcome Cheryl Witham to District 41, our new Chief Financial Officer, CSBO. We're very excited to have Cheryl. Cheryl comes with us to us with a number of years of experience from three different school districts, the New Trier High School District, the Oak Park River Forest High School District, and then, I'm forgetting the name of the district in Wisconsin.
Minnesota.
Or totally wrong state.
Yeah.
Are they one in the same?
Cold.
One of those cold places. And then Cheryl also has some private sector work as well, and that's where she started her work. But we are so pleased to have her join us. She's been on the job a week and a day and has already made a positive impact in our district. Tonight she presented to the board regarding our budgeting process, which we'll give a report out on later. But I just wanted to stop for a moment and say welcome, and we're excited to have you. So
welcome.
Next up, we've got some exciting news from the PTA. Kristen Massey is going to talk to us a little bit about some local awards that we're so proud of.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be here tonight. I'm my official capacity as a DuPage West Region Director. I'm also a District 41 parent. I have an 8th grader here at Hadley, and then I have a sophomore also at District 87 at West. I'm really excited to be here to present some more to some very well-deserving PTAs. I just wanted to give you a little background first on DuPage West. Along with being the director of DuPage West, I also sit on the state board of the PTA. I'm also on the board nominating committee for the state of Illinois and the scholarship committee and the leadership development. DuPage West is made up of us of 71 PTA units, three of which are councils in District 41, 200 and 204. I have three preschools in 200 and 204, and then also one in the 93 District 93 area. I have two special needs PTAs, one gifted PTA, and then 62 other local units. We have about probably between the 71 units, on top of the fact that we have co-presidents, we probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 or so presidents that I oversee the work of their local units. What else do I want to tell you? That's a lot of those cards. Oh, these units represent the towns of Wheaton, Warrenville, Naperville, Bloomingdale, Carroll Stream, Aurora, Glendale Heights, and Hanover Park, and Glen Ellyn, of course. There are currently 19,313 PTA members in DuPage West, which represents about 20% of all of the members in the state of Illinois.
Wow.
So, throughout this year, I've conducted a lot of training. I've attended local meetings and council meetings, roundtables, brought in speakers, And last week we had our end of the year meeting and we presented awards to a number of local units, many of which received membership awards, and then a select few were presented with some other distinguished awards of their recognition and contributions to the PTA. So first I'm going to start with an individual who started the PTA last year. She started as a co-president, and at the end of the year, her co-president decided she wasn't going to continue again, and so she stepped up to just take over the PTA on her own. Over the last 2 years, I've seen her really blossom as a president, and she consistently attends meetings and asks insightful questions and is always there to advocate for her parents and students in her unit. So tonight I'm honored to present the PTA President of the Year Award to Katie Prescott from the Ben Franklin PTA.
Congratulations, Katie.
Congratulations.
Nice job. Well, well deserved.
Congratulations to Franklin.
Thank you so much. We're just sad that she's done.
Yeah.
And she's finished her 2 years, so we'll find a way to bring her back around. So the second award I want to talk a little bit about is for a local unit. And I want to say back in October at one of our District 41 PTA Council meetings was the first time I heard about a local campaign called the We Are One. That was brought forward. And at that time, you talked about the fact that they purchased T-shirts for all their students and all the staff and the administration and the teachers, and that they were going to be celebrating a We Are One Day, which was about creating a sense of spirit and cohesiveness across their school. When I first heard about it, I thought it was really interesting, but it wasn't until a few weeks later when Sarah Tauscher spoke about the event to both the representatives from the DuPage East and the DuPage West PTA. It was probably, I don't know, a couple hundred people there that day. And I have to say that when she spoke that day, she spoke with tears in her eyes and the pride in her school. And I knew that Forest Glen PTA had embraced all that the PTA was about, one voice, one school. It stuck with me all year, and I'm honored to present Sarah and Melissa with the PTA's Local Unit of the Year Award from DuPage West Region.
And Mary's here, too. I think Mary should come up. She's part of the whole thing, right? That's your membership. You also get a membership award for increasing your membership. So here's your membership.
Here you go.
Congratulations. Way to go. Kristen, thank you.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you for all your service as well.
Yeah.
Next up, conversation. Past few board meetings around content specialization and how can we possibly try to make some of the content specialization more consistent when we're talking about odd number of sections. So, for instance, in second grade, there are three sections of second grade or five sections in fifth grade. So that's an odd section. And how do we make that more consistent? Had board feedback, went to teachers, spoke with principals, had a lot of different conversations around that content specialization and how to make it consistent. Actually started drafting some recommendations that I showed the board. But in more and more conversations with teachers and principals and assistant principals, it really kept coming back to principals and teachers knowing their school better and their students better around how to best apply some of the different methods for teacher content specialization when it comes to an odd section. And this was discussed, during the think tank conversation that there were always going to be odd sections unless, the board added a significant amount of money and space to rectify that. There would always be that aspect of it. The think tank group, which comprised of 60 people, upwards of 60 people, they talked about that as well. But at the end, they still felt like teacher specialization was an important structure to implement. But again, as I go back to, you know, feeling like the superintendent or anyone else mandating a absolute way that teacher specialization has to be implemented within an odd section, I just kept going back to the voice of the teachers and the principals, and they kept saying, you know what? Each group of students is a little bit different, and we've got to have some of that flexibility to make some of those decisions. They appreciated the template that we created, because what they'll be able to use that is to think through different scenarios, different ways of applying it. But it kept coming back to, we know our kids. We know them really well, and give us that freedom. I had a teacher email me and talk to me about it, but I also went out to a number of different teachers throughout the district just to ask that question. So I feel like that is in the best interest of our district. It is not a perfect situation. I recognize that. But I think our educators, our principals, assistant principals, in collaboration with Karen and others in the cabinet team to help facilitate and make those decisions for each of the buildings. So that's where we're at as of today and going forward. So, board members, any questions for me on that?
I guess a couple questions
okay.
on that. I've brought this up quite a bit. I think my biggest concern...
Speak up just a little bit, Stephanie, for the back of the
room. I think my biggest concern is that our plan here, it's not really responsive to some of the feedback from the survey from the staff, especially addressing inconsistencies, how we do things inconsistently amongst elementary mm-hmm. schools, and also figuring out better ways to support teachers that have to teach both curriculums, literacy and STEAM. The number one concern that I saw was that a teacher that has to teach both literacy and STEAM is at a disadvantage because they have half as much planning time per subject as their counterparts. Their individual plan time, their PLC time is cut mm-hmm. in half. And so I feel like leaving it up to a building decision, you could have a teacher at one school, as we do this year, you could have a teacher at one school that has one section of students that they teach all day long. So even though they're at a disadvantage with their planning and their time to plan their curriculum, they are only managing half as many students as their counterpart, whereas at other schools we have one teacher managing two curriculums and also managing two groups of students. And I'm honestly trying to understand the advantage of having one teacher teach two different groups of students. I mean, the only explanation I've ever been given is so students can have two teachers. And I don't think that's why specialization was created. The specialization was created so teachers could be content level experts. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that component, I'm trying to understand this theory of, well, let's let students have two teachers, especially when it's putting, it seems like it's putting both the students and the teachers at a disadvantage.
No, I appreciate your feedback. consistently when I spoke to teachers, when I gave them the document that I shared with the board probably, mm-hmm. Two meetings ago?
April 11th, yeah.
Teachers kept coming back to me and saying, but I want to work with our building, with the teachers within our building to make this decision. If you're mandating to me that I can't, you know, teach two sections of, you know, teach a fourth and a fifth grade of literacy on both sections, that may not be best for what we want to do.
Well, I see that as a little different. I mean, I'm not...
But those were those nuances that people were struggling with across the board.
I think that's a little different. There you have a teacher teaching one subject. They're teaching, mm-hmm. you know, math at a fourth grade level and fifth grade level. That's a little different than having a grade level teacher teaching both subjects. Because I would assume, I mean, if you're teaching one subject, even if it's two different grades, there's going to be a little bit more overlap with planning and things. I think that mm-hmm. that would be easier to manage. And I don't know that there has to be a hard and fast rule, and maybe there's exceptions, but I do know this year we had at least one of our schools had, in second grade, had one teacher have the same group of students all day mm-hmm. long. And I know at another school, we had one teacher have two different groups of students. And so I know it's concerning from both the staff and the parent level because it's inconsistent. I think some people would say, you know, maybe the one building's at a disadvantage because you have a teacher that has half as much planning time and they're managing 50 students. So they're spending time managing 50 students, 50 report cards, 50, you know, all of the things with 50 students, and planning double the curriculum as their counterparts who are also managing 50 students. But I just, it's a big inconsistency, and I'm trying to understand the advantage and how this is being responsive to the concerns of consistency and taking into account our teachers. I mean, I know, for example, at Ben Franklin next year, we're looking to hire a new teacher who's going to be teaching both literacy and STEAM at the third grade level. So we're going to have a brand new teacher to our district teaching, having to plan two subjects with their counterparts in the building and manage 50 students. I just think that's a lot to put on a teacher. And I would be curious to actually ask our teachers, how would you feel if this was you, if you were told you had to teach second or third graders in both literacy and STEAM, would you want to have the same group of kids all day long, or would you want to have two different groups of students?
Wasn't that part of the conversation? I know at the beginning of the year, I think it was at Churchill, where we had an odd section, and so you either in an update or reported at a board meeting, I can't remember which, the principal, Klespitz, went to the teachers at that grade level, and then they as a team looked at the student population. This is just from my memory, but the student population, what was going to be taught, and then the teachers who were there and their level of expertise, tenure. There were a lot of things taken into account. So I'm hearing what Stephanie's saying in terms of the balance of that, and it seems to me that the putting it back at that very discreet level of conversation, to have a teacher say, it's I'm the best one for this, which is what I think ended up at Churchill. My understanding is that that individual mm-hmm. teacher, so like you said, I'm the best one for this. I want to do it. And took that upon themselves in order to do it. So the template, you know, that you gave us that I'm looking at, mm-hmm. I think was in response to, you know, concerns, not unfounded. At the same time, we talk a lot about going back to the teachers and the faculty and the principals to say, we know our school the best. And the message that I'm hearing you say is they said to you, we know our school's the best, let us work this out. It would be interesting to hear at the end of the academic year for you to have some of those conversations with the teachers that managed and taught in that odd mm-hmm. section to see if there's any themes or corollaries or, you know, ways that going forward there could be some best practices among the principals to say, here's what worked in a way that we surprised us that it did work, and here's something that we really need to think through for next year.
I think the biggest concern when I presented this to them was the hard, as you use your word, the hard and fast rules across the board. And they consistently said to me, but every group of students is different. Every teacher is different. So if you're going to sit here and tell me this is the only way to apply it, that's where I struggle with, is the hard and fast rules that you must do it this way. The superintendent said that's where, across the board, each group of teachers that I spoke to really struggled with that piece. Did they appreciate the thinking here? Yeah. Did they, would they have that part of their conversations with their principals? Absolutely. But they consistently struggled with, so this is it.
Well, that's what we said with specialization. We said you have to specialize. I mean, that's
yeah.
the rule. The rule is you're specializing. Mm-hmm. You teach second to fifth grade, you teach either literacy or you teach STEAM. I mean,
right.
We created that rule. I'm just struggling to understand why implementing it will let you do whatever you want. And you may not specialize, and if you don't, maybe we'll give you the same kids all day, maybe mm-hmm. we won't. I cannot imagine a new teacher coming into Ben Franklin next year if you were to tell them, well, we really want you to have two groups of students because we'd like every kid to have two teachers. But do you think it would be better if you had one group of students to manage all day? Do you think a brand new teacher is going to honestly give their opinion and say,
well, we I want the teacher could have 10 years of experience. We don't know that.
No, it's in our report for tonight. I said that
I get what you're saying.
But I hear what you're saying. I know.
I get that. Like I said, we created the rule that we have to specialize, and when it comes to implement it, now we're saying, well, we'll let you decide what you want at a building level. Why don't we let them decide if they want to specialize? I mean, it's no different. We're very inconsistent across the district. You have parents that are saying, why at this school does that kid in second grade get to stay with the same group of mm-hmm. students all day long? But at my school, they mix them up. I don't have the same students all day. Why at that school they have a teacher that doesn't specialize and they get to stay with the same teacher all day? At our school, we don't. What if you have a parent that says, you know what, my teacher doesn't specialize, my kid's at a disadvantage, I want to switch teacher. I mean, it's mm-hmm. we're very inconsistent across the district. We created the rule. I feel like we should set some parameters, at least for similar situations. Next year, you know you're going to have at three of our elementary schools an odd number of sections in third grade. Why can we not consistently address it across the district? I think it's, you know, as a parent, it's concerning to me that something like that will be addressed inconsistently. And I've really been given no answer for why you would have to have one teacher teach two different groups of students, except to say, well, we want them to have two teachers, but their teacher's not specializing. So what does it matter?
Could I ask a couple questions for clarity? You said that when you addressed this, you went out to the buildings and you talked to people. Do you feel that there's... you said that they came back to you and said, this is what we want to do.
Yeah, when I talked to them about the structures.
About the structures.
Yeah.
We want this flexibility. Do you feel like the people who told you they want this flexibility were being genuine? I mean, they're the teacher. It was the teachers in the building. So these are the pros, and they're telling you this is what they want to do.
Yes. I mean, because I had the document right there with me. We talked about it. They looked at it, and they were just giving me the feedback. And again, they said, these make sense, but is it the hard and fast? Is it the only way each and every time?
So I have another question about consistency. So if we had even numbers of classes, we would be specializing.
Correct.
So the only thing that really keeps us from doing this is that we have an odd number at a level, and to do that, we would have to add a teacher then. If we want to do that, reduce those class sizes, mm-hmm. figure out where to put that fourth mm-hmm. class, let's say, out of three, and that becomes a budget concern.
Correct.
And we often make decisions that we have to make some compromises on from budget concerns to be able, you know, we want to be as consistent as mm-hmm. we can, but we can point it out the facilities task force had to do this. We can point out the differences in the buildings. Mm-hmm. They aren't consistent. We strive for consistency. But we don't necessarily say that we're going to be able to maintain that at all times, at mm-hmm. all costs, because we have to deal with the cost problem. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
That's fair, and I think, you know, from my understanding, during that think tank process, they did talk about odd sections. They knew that this was going to be a piece, and again, roughly 60 people came up with these recommendations to the board that said this is where we're going to be at, recognizing there are at times going to be odd sections. Our application of it is going to be very similar to what I put down in the document. But teachers and principals still want to make sure that they're having that conversation. How does it apply? So what I'm hearing a lot from your concerns, Stephanie, are the regrouping of students. So when I'm that odd section teacher, could I just have the same 25 kids because I'm teaching four content areas?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, and I'm not proposing adding sections.
No, that's not what I'm hearing.
It's more how are we going to consistently address it at a similar situation mm-hmm. level, if in mm-hmm. third grade or whatever, mm-hmm. to address it similarly at all the schools. I'm not saying it has to be the same in every grade or in every subject, but I think it should be. I think we should handle it consistently across
the district. Some of the feedback from this year to see how some of this worked, and certainly the principals as they meet, I would assume, I know that you're talking to them about this because it's been on the table for the last couple of months.
And I know you've talked mm-hmm. to staff, but I mean, have we talked to, I mean, like, what percentage of the, you know, staff has been involved?
Try to get to as many second through fifth grade teachers, but to say it's 80% now.
So.
It's something that I can bring back. But I think I also understand.
There's a lot of feedback in the survey about it, and I about that and about the inconsistencies.
Okay.
You know, I can't.
No,
I can't tell you how to do it, but I'm at least just going to bring up the concerns that we're still.
I appreciate that.
You know, we've set the rule to specialize, and I think we should be consistent how we're doing it, and not be setting our teachers up and our students up for a disadvantage.
Okay. Thank you,
Erica. And
I was going to say, I heard your voice.
I did well. I almost interrupted stuff.
Can you hear him okay? Speak up a little bit.
So I would echo Stephanie's thoughts, but we've agreed as a board not to go ahead and repeat ourselves. So, and she did a much better job than I could ever do at that. But I would say the consistency piece for me is an issue.
Okay.
Specialization, if that's what this district said is the best way to teach our kids, when we don't do that, it debunks that theory. But in reference to what Dean just said, he's correct. The one way that you could respond to that is by adding a teacher. But something that some of us up here don't actually understand or could never use the term, but you have to prioritize, then you have to make budget offsets. So if that was the consistency piece that we had, then you offset the budget somewhere else that's less important to get that consistency piece. We certainly have places in this budget that are less important than that consistency piece. So no one, if that was the case, no one's advocating adding on to the budget, you would offset it. I'm 100% sure that I could find some places that we don't need money going into that could offset that. So as I said, I'm totally with Stephanie on this.
Okay.
I think it's a disadvantage that we're, if we're going to do that, then we should just allow every school to operate autonomously, because they've got certain needs within their school, and they should just decide that second grade's going to specialize and third grade's going to teach with one teacher. If that's what we're saying here, and that's really what we're saying, then that's what we should be doing, and let all four schools operate autonomously.
Thank you.
I need a clarifying question. I understand the consistency piece, and I think that's important. I know it's a you're balancing what policy is and trying to be consistent between the different schools, and then doing what's best for the individual schools and children. If you find that the specialization, the majority of the buildings find that the specialization is something that they're not doing. You know, at that point, do we reevaluate the practice?
That was, you know, asked in the survey, and the majority of teachers are supporting teacher specialization. But Stephanie's correct. I mean, there are comments in there around how do we try to address some of the odd section. I'm not here saying that it's easy. I'm saying it is part of our reality. How do we find ways to address it? How do we find ways to support it? And I think that's the feedback that I'm hearing from Kurt and Stephanie.
But you're asking, is it the majority of the sections? Is it the majority of the schools? Do schools have a majority of odd sections?
No.
That's not
so
the
like,
okay,
so I apologize. I misunderstood your question. Yeah. I apologize.
Okay. So is it localized?
I'm just looking around for Laura Campbell. Hakeen, I can't
see. She's very important.
Number of odd sections. Can you? Oh,
okay.
Yes. And Lincoln is an even school.
That's two through five.
Okay.
Yeah.
So five throughout the district.
So three of the four. Okay.
Thank you, Laurie.
Thanks.
Okay, I appreciate it. That's it. That's it for
me. Board reports. I know we had one from Joe on the wellness committee. It was attached to our board report. Joe, update? Sure.
Sure. On May 3rd, when the wellness committee met, we reaffirmed the message that we support healthy and safe snacks, fruit, veggies, and water. What we're going to continue to work on is creating structure and a communication plan to get this out to all parents and staff. Our goal of the committee is by June to have a full report to to this board that will include an AP, an administrative procedure, for this wellness policy. Okay. We also have a finance one, too.
Yep, go right ahead.
We covered a couple things we're going to cover here. One is the Headley roofing bid that we're going to be asked that we reject the bid and move forward with a smaller plan. We'll get more detail about that later in this meeting. We also talked about substitute pay. And then also we went over a long part of our meeting was the budget, the type of budget that Cheryl has done in the past with New Trier and Oak Park River Forest High School. We kind of settled on projections of going out 5 years. That's one of the things we wanted to make sure we got out there so she could start working on it. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other things we asked of her, which include a community task force for finance. I shouldn't call it a task force, but an advisory board, perhaps. And she has done some of that in the past. So later this summer, she'll give us some of those ideas of what has worked, and we can see if we could pursue one for next year.
Thank you, Joe.
Do we know, just off the wellness committee part of it, do we know, like, Lincoln had their tea last week, and I asked my son what kind of food was served there. I'm pretty sure he said cookies.
Cookies, strawberry.
I'm okay with, I think we should feed our seniors in honor of cookie, but... So I guess for me, that's something, to me, that mm-hmm. the piece, again, to consistency. I mean, I'd hate to serve our seniors carrots. You know? I mean, that to me, I never liked carrots. If I was a senior, I'd hate them even more. But so we probably need to talk about that because it's an important piece, and I'm being kind of facetious, but I'm being serious. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I think everything I heard, including my son, said, as usual, it was just an outstanding day. Our parents did a great job with organizing it, but they're not feeding them carrots and celery, so we need to figure that out. You know, if our concern is allergens and everything else, well, we certainly had. And again, I'm going to say, I mean, if I was on the wellness committee, I would probably be a terrible guy for that because I think it's okay to serve a cookie in a classroom once in a while, but. I think we just go overboard on some of the stuff. But if we're looking at adopting that, we have to figure this stuff out. And I'd like to try so we don't run into these problems where we do these things and then we come back later reactive and try and figure it out like we're doing with specialization, which, again, you know, was brought up ahead of time. The board at the time never handled it.
I think Joe's point, the wellness committee, it's not just can you give a mouse a cookie. It's not about do we offer cookies. It's the health issues and all of the, increase in the, what's the word I'm looking for? Allergies related to some and many significant. So to your point, Kurt, if we're inviting people in and we're doing in-house activities, what's that piece of the conversation? But it's not about prohibiting a cookie because we don't think they should eat sweets. It's that the wellness committee was much broader in their perspective on this because of a health and safety issue.
You still have the allergies.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. You have activities in the building and it affects it.
There may be some people out there that are just about the healthiness part of it. You know, that's just what they feel in terms of. And I'm advocating trying to eat a healthy diet too, but but I enjoy an Oreo.
Joe, what were you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the committee's going to present to the board.
Right.
And when they do, and this is an update of what they're working on, what we're working on. And I think it does go deeper than just allergens, though. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. We do have a parent on that committee, and we do have a nurse, and we have our nutrition expert. So it's a lot of people giving the feedback. I think when you talk about Lincoln tends to be one of the most restrictive schools. Mm-hmm. In regard to this, and they've kind of set the standard and that we're adapting for the most part.
I'm not saying
this right. I'm just telling you where it's coming from. Your example was Lincoln. So there's a lot of inconsistencies amongst the five schools, and that's discussed. But a lot of the feedback they're getting is from the experts. What is being done elsewhere is being discussed too, and that's why they're going to present it to the board in June. I mean, it's for us to hear. And I mean, we can clearly reject policy. So, but I think it's good, healthy discussion, no pun intended. and we can listen to what they have to say, and maybe it'll persuade you that having things that are healthy in school is best for kids. Because it's not just about one kid here or there. It's about a culture of being healthy and teaching them that for the rest of their life. And that's what the Wellness Committee talks about. And, you know, we are teaching them things in school. We're teaching them physical education. We're teaching them a lot of other things to help them be healthy for the rest of their life. And that's part of what this committee looks at. So, you know, hopefully they get it to us in June, and then we can have a healthy discussion.
Thank you, Jim. No pun intended. Okay.
Other board?
Thank you. Dean?
Yeah. Generally, with board reports, we talk about things that we did in the district. I had one that was outside the district that I just want to draw a parallel. I had the opportunity with my family to visit the University of Utah this past month. We attended an honors college session, and they were describing their Praxis Labs programs. And this university draws students from all the disciplines, engineering, social sciences, business, art. You kind of get the picture. To collaborate on innovative problem-based solutions to pressing societal challenges. And under the guidance of faculty and community leaders, the students analyze their topic through in-depth classroom and field research, such as lectures, panels, one-on-one interviews, reading, and off-campus trips. After problems have been identified and solutions developed, they work together to put their ideas into action in the community. And this university was bragging about this and saying that they went on to say this is a program that sets them apart from other universities. And it was the kind of program that prepared their students for life after college. And all I could think about when I was attending this session that they're making a big deal about with the university students is the parallels that we can draw to D41 with what we're doing in PBLs. Because this, if anybody's been working on any of the PBLs, you can draw parallels exactly to this. And this is what the universities are going to. And sometimes we talk about being able to hand off our kids from elementary to Hadley and Hadley to West and then West on to universities. And I can see that, in my opinion, we're on the right track. So.
Sir?
Thank you. Dean? Any other board reports? All right. I had asked, and thank you for moving up briefly the follow-up that we wanted to do on our board self-evaluation. So let me just give it a little bit of context for the audience and those live streaming. We had a special workshop on May 4th last week, which was our board self-evaluation, which is part of our biannual board policy. Every 2 years for a self-evaluation on governance, and we use the Illinois Association of School Boards as our governance author, and what we do is complete a survey that is encompassed in this tool, which is six what they call pillars of governance. So we did that last week, and while there was some disagreement for the board initially on whether to do this governance evaluation, I want to personally thank all the board members for attending, along with Dr. Gordon last week. It was facilitated by Mrs. Barb Toney. She's a field services director with the IASB, which is the Illinois Association of School Boards, who was our governance partner. She provided a summary to board that we all received, I think, on Friday?
I think so.
Over the weekend, Friday?
I think it's Friday.
And identified the next steps as she heard them as she facilitated. So I want to read those directly, and then I invite board members to share a comment or two about your takeaways from the self-evaluation. Number one, continue to communicate with the board, each other, and the public with the board, how the actions and initiatives of the district align with the goals of the long-range plan, which is the first governance principle. Which is the board clarifies the district purpose. The second kind of next step for us was to identify and monitor benchmarks or key metrics for the goals in the long-range plan, which the district is currently working on. So that's both clarifying the district purpose but also monitoring performance, another one of the pillars. And then the third one is at the next meeting, which is tonight, right now, district discuss, present board member takeaways for the workshop that we could share with each other and then also with the public as a follow-up to the meeting. So I'll open it up, and I don't know, maybe we'll just go down the row. Patrick, if you don't mind, and then we'll just
walk through.
Get your thoughts together.
I know. You're at the end. What can I say?
So this was, I think Dean and I talked about this before, this is our third one that we attended as city board members, and every meeting is different, but I do like the opportunity to be in a closed session because it allows me personally to be a little bit more unprofessional at a meeting when I know it's just the seven of us, and speak a bit more frank and open with the board members. But in the meeting that we had, I think we all understood as a board that, you know, we're seven individual voices, and sometimes those voices carry. I think we all walked away understanding that that may not change in the future, but, you know, we're all going to try to take, we all pledge to take steps to see if we can make the board more effective in moving the communication in a more positive direction, you know. So I don't think there was any concrete, you know, grand aha moments, but I don't think that's ever the purpose of it. It's just to, where are you? Where do you think you are? And then where do you think your other board members are? And then let's move to the next point. So for me, it was constructive.
Thank you. Stephanie?
The one big thought that I wrote down is that we learned that, you know, we're all different individuals, have different viewpoints, and it's important that we talked about meetings and asking questions at meetings when there's presentations, but also it's important for us to make sure that we share out what we're thinking, that mm-hmm. you know, we owe it to the public to provide mm-hmm. explanations for what we're thinking and make sure we're having that conversation even while trying to have effective meetings.
Thank you.
So if you've been coming to board meetings, you know that this board likes to hammer things out in public and to disagree, and that's a good thing for a board to do. And the one thing I will tell you is that I am certain that every single person on this board cares extremely deeply about this school. They care a lot about education, and they have their heart and soul into this. Stephanie and Patrick just said, you know, we have different opinions. Of course we do. The reason we talk about them, though, is so that you know we're talking about them, so that you can hear us with differing opinions. I will say that, and I've said this before, that when I listen to my fellow board members, sometimes I change my positions. Sometimes they come in a better informed way or bring up something I didn't think about, and I think that's good. So I think that the discussion is good. I think we could speed it up a little bit. I'm always the guy who wants to speed these things up. I think it's good that we, you know, what we came out of it with is we need to make sure that our voice is heard. We need to be careful about repeating our voice over and over during the same discussion, you know. And I thought it was very good and honor to be part of the board and part of this group.
Thank you.
You know, I think all three of you guys really, you know, made great points. It's not a lot that I can add, you know, other than I think there is some value in self-reflection. And I think that was, to me, that was what I thought really helped me kind of look back and look inward and say, you know, how can I be a better board member? How can I better work how can I better work with the other board members to be more effective? And any time that you do that, I think it creates a value. You know, I think we've got a really good, very good board, Dean is correct. I think everyone, you know, has a lot of reason to be positive about this board and how we've done it, and people care a lot. And again, I think it came through in that meeting.
Thank you. Thanks, Drew. Kurt.
I was one that thought we'd done it last August, so I didn't know if we needed to do it again. But I guess it was different. I voted no to go into closed session. I was one of those that felt like, you know, this to me is discussion, and someone can say frank and unprofessional in the same terminology as Patrick did. I see it differently. I think it's genuine. I think it's genuine to let you guys see what we think. I don't have any problems with people on this board. I'll tell you, I have no problem saying anything to them in front of you at all. So that's why you elected me, is to be transparent. So for me, I hope when we do this again, I believe it's in 2 years, that we do this in open session. And I don't think it's unprofessional. I just think it's being genuine. And, you know, the notes that I had besides that were, we really are seven individual people. We all have seven individual thoughts. And at times we have to try and come to consensus on some of that stuff. But I just hope that we do an open session next time.
Thank you. Joe?
Okay. A lot of the same, but one thing, something different that one of my takeaways, before the workshop, we took a survey, kind of was focused on behavioral indicators. When we got together, the majority picked one of those behavior indicators, which was a district aligned to mission. What does that mean? It was what I took away, why we chose that one. We all wanted to make sure. It turns out we're working on this long-range plan. It's the turnaround of the long-range plan. I think it was done last time in 12. It's a four-year plan. We're meeting on May 16th again with Paul and his cabinet and other staff members to discuss the work that we did back in January and February. And that whole discussion took most of the length of the meeting, mm-hmm. too. And it was all around what we're doing with the long-range plan. And I think that's good. So as a group, we're focused on it. We've been working on it. We're focused on it. And that goes out to the community. And then the one takeaway from that I thought was imperative was the metrics that we're going to tie to that long-range plan. And that's our next step. We're not going to get agreement on that for all the reasons everybody stated. We're different, the whole nine yards, not to be repetitive here. But the metrics we choose and the discussion we have around those metrics mm-hmm. is very important. And that was one of the significant takeaways I got from our workshop.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe. Same thing that I would add to Joe's, and I won't repeat it all, but I really focused on my takeaways being the importance of the long-range plan in those conversations, because those are the strategic priorities that this board over two Saturday mornings really hammered out. And what I really am feeling good about, as we talked about in our self-evaluation, is that as you look at those, they really do align back to these governance pillars, which is the anchor to what we're supposed to be doing as a board. And so that, for me, was an important piece. The other one is that is the takeaway, and it ties into the metrics, but metrics in a little bit different way. But we did have a really good discussion around our board meetings, and we reviewed the norms, which are at the table each week for us to be reminded of. We did a brief review even of our oath of office, which you say allowed when you get seated as an elected board member, which I think was a really good reminder of our commitment to all the stakeholders, respect taxpayer interests, respect the privacy of students and employees. It reminded me that all of us as board members, you know, have a lead in these regular meetings and how important that is. And the biggest takeaway is that these pieces, the long-range plan, the metrics that we'll be discussing on the 16th with the administrative team, our code of conduct, our norms, our oath, are really the metrics that we're accountable to for effective governing. And so I thought we did a nice job as a board circling back to that. So, again, I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Paul, for being there as well. And for your time. Thanks for your comments tonight. And we'll keep working. Okay, anything else? All right, thank you. Thanks for letting us move that up. Public participation. Starting at the last meeting, we had made a change to the process for making public comments. So when you came in, there was a sign-up sheet that you simply sign your name on, and then Mrs. Moak will be calling from that sign-up sheet. You have the sheet, Nancy? Okay, thank you. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, limit comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask that in the interest of time, you forgo making them, but please provide the board, and this is in general also, any copies of written material that you may have. It's always helpful for us to get that. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative, and we ask your consideration of this in your comments as well. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised are forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff member for a response as a response is warranted, and if the member of the public provides the appropriate contact information. Again, we're not filling out those forms anymore, so should you want to follow up, please let Mrs. Moak know before the meeting's over. All right. Mrs. Moak, anyone present who would like to address the board?
Jeff Cooper.
Hey, Mr. Cooper. Welcome. Jeff, do you mind terribly standing again because we're live streaming and it just it get picked up on the
sure.
mic up here. Thank you.
Brian Bunkowski.
Yeah, the mic is up here. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks, Paula.
Please the crowd.
Thank you.
No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Brian Bunkowski, Karen Diamond, Christina Kellen. What do they all share? They don't live in District 41. But they want to, under darkness, have a major say in who will be on the board come next April.
Mr. Cooper, I had asked again in deference to students,
they're
staff.
They're employees of the district, and yes. It's free speech, and we cannot rein in free speech.
I understand that. I just asked for your I asked for your consideration. Thank
okay,
you.
Just naming them. They should be happy with their lot here. Ms. Diamond makes almost what the highest paid principals here do. Mr. Bunkowski is north of six figures also. So they are forming a pack to ensure the highest quality of education for the children, they say. What they really mean is they want to control who is going to be negotiating their next contract. To summarize, they have no skin in the game as they are not District 41 residents. Which, by the way, is the same for over three-quarters of their members, non-District 41 residents. So if we give away the house again, as our board president did two contracts ago, it won't adversely affect them, only us silly old residents. So, Mr. Bunkowski and company, you've been exposed. If your activities occur at all during school hours, I'll know. I won't stand for that. I hope your bosses feel the same way. We deserve a fair election. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Next.
Liza Suri.
Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to introduce myself. I got involved in the facilities committee to see the state of the schools. I was very excited to see the other schools in the district because my children go to Lincoln. And I know tonight we're going to be discussing the findings of the facilities committee and you're going to be asking us some questions. So I wanted to talk a little bit before we got into the meat of it about my experiences and say a few words because I just wanted to just take that opportunity tonight. I was very excited to see the other schools and kind of get in there because the tours were something that I thought was just an invaluable opportunity for us as members of that task force. And getting into the schools was a very surprising and very telling experience for me. There are some inarguable issues with the schools, even currently. And we can get into them. I don't know if we'll get into them tonight. We can get into them. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to list them. But there are some issues right today with some of the grade schools, with Hadley. Obviously, there are still portables here. You know them. You have them in your report. We've talked about them ad nauseum, and we don't need to do that. But they need fixing immediately. And we, as a committee, have come up with some really great ideas. Some of them are front runners, and some of them are some second place ideas. And we've talked about a lot of different things. I'm just here tonight to say, please, please consider the work that we as a committee have put in as far as touring the schools. We talked to the teachers. We talked to the kids. Boots to the ground. We, when appropriate, talked to parents. Please ask questions of members of the committee. We are here tonight. And we are available by email. We are available by phone. We will meet with you. Please talk to not just the vociferous members that you may hear from, whether or not you ask, but please reach out to those of us who may not always be in your ear and ask about what some of the other members may have seen and heard, because there are a lot of people who may be vociferous who maybe didn't even see the school. It's important to talk to whoever you can, I ask you, as a board, because there were a lot of really hardworking people on this committee.
30 seconds.
We know you understand that money is an issue. We know we understand that money is an issue, but it cannot be the only issue. Stakeholders does not just mean taxpayers. Stakeholders are kids, mainly kids. they need to be considered here. The long-range plans, obviously vastly important. We're not looking for anything to happen immediately. Long-range is very important, but stuff does need to happen. So many times on this board, we feel as if, so many of us feel as if there's a lot of blame being placed. And with Mother's Day being yesterday, I just feel like I'm going to dust off a chestnut and say, I don't care who started it. Please, be the board that can go and be forward-looking. Make some changes. Be brave. Be strong. Do some things to fix these problems in the schools. Be the board that can make the changes that need to be made. We have some good ideas. Please talk to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liza. Thank you.
Bruce Curry.
Good evening, Bruce.
You can, yeah,
that
you're
either
good
one,
right
there's
there.
A mic down there, too. Thank you.
Mine was on project-based learning. Problem-based for learning, and I'd like this included in there. It says, what advice would you give in terms of continuing to use the problem-based learning teaching strategy? And this was part of the survey. It wasn't originally given in when the man was presenting about a month or so ago, but it's in there now. And what I noticed was that the PBLs from the admin, 76%, they want to expand it or maintain it. So 76% want to either expand it or maintain it. The opposite of that would be reduce the use of problem-based learning or return to the traditional practice of not using problem-based learning. In pre-K, kindergarten, and first grade, 73%, or the exact flipped opposite, would reduce the use of problem-based learning or return to the traditional method. In second and third grade, a total of 60% would go back, or about two-thirds. In fourth and fifth, 53% would go back to the traditional method or return or reduce the use of PBLs. And in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, 68% would choose to reduce or return to the traditional method. Some comments from teachers that were in the survey are as follows. Many teachers are frustrated with PBLs. These are their words, not mine.
1 minute.
Are frustrated with PBLs that do not connect to students and our standards and take a lot of time out of what we are expected to teach. We would love to use more resources to help our lowest student. Go back to the traditional way of teaching that is working in all other districts and worked well before in this district. Get rid of PBLs for primary. We need time to work on foundational skills. Also, as regards to 21st century furniture, they didn't like that either. It should not be required or a mandate that all teachers need to implement a certain number of PBLs per year. They do not mesh well with literacy and seem to work better in STEAM, especially science. And PBLs pull away from the much-needed curriculum of social studies and grammar and spelling. Very time-consuming, and in the end, children are lacking in the previously mentioned skills.
Can you sum?
PBLs has been shoved down our throats. Prior to the superintendent, we did project-based learning and spent quite a bit of time learning that method. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Bruce.
Lisa Bruce.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, you can spin right up here. I just want to set the context. Mrs. Brooks contacted me last night about having an additional minute of time to speak tonight, and I had asked her just to give a little insight on what it would be about, and it's on the school perception survey's results from the April 11th board meeting and results posted. So, thank you.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Lisa Brooks, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the Student Services Parent Advisory Council. A SPAC is an open group available to parents, teachers, and staff promoting awareness, education, advocacy, and acceptance of different learners within District 41. I became involved in this group out of the desire to attain the best possible education for my son Joshua, who has autism. At the April 11th board meeting, the results of the school perception survey were presented, and the community was encouraged to review the results. Upon reviewing the data, I found that the questions related to overall satisfaction for special education were among the lower scoring items of the survey. While other areas on the survey scored positive responses ranging in the 80th to 90th percentiles, special education only had positive responses in the 60th to 70th percentile. For example, parents and staff were given the statement, D41 does a good job of meeting the needs of special education students. Only 77% of parents strongly agreed or agreed with this statement, and only 66% of staff strongly agreed or agreed. Our district is well known for having extremely knowledgeable, capable, dedicated, and caring teachers. These are the people that work with our students every day. If only 66% of staff feel we're meeting the needs of special education students, it is very clear that we have some work to do. The individual comments from staff and parents support the need for improvements as well. For example, from the staff comments, the leadership of our district is self-serving, pushing their own agendas and ideas, especially in the area of special education. They rarely seek input from staff about decisions for procedures, processes, and decisions about specific students. When they do seek staff input, they still make the decisions whether the staff agrees or not. There is very little support for special education staff from the administration. We are not given budgets for professional development or supplies. Questions to administration go unanswered for weeks and sometimes months. I prepared a document which contains all the comments from the survey related to special education, and I would strongly encourage the board to read each comment. I'm confident that the point of the perception survey was to identify areas where improvements can be made and create a strategy to address those areas. With that in mind, I am here to ask the board to take action related to improving special education services in District 41. My son has been receiving special education services from the district for the last 9 years. Upon reflection of those years, we've had some significant failures related to his education. However, we've also experienced some significant success. That success was a direct result of collaboration between myself, my son's teachers, private therapist, and his assistant principal and principal. Collaboration has been the key to his success. Therefore, I'd like to propose that the board form a task force comprised of parents, staff, and board members to discuss special education. The group would participate in discussion and collaboration with the end result of presenting recommendations to the board for what can be done to increase satisfaction and improve special education services for our teachers and students. We have parents here tonight willing to donate their time for the remainder of the school year and over the summer to participate. I feel strongly, based upon the survey results, that we would be able to identify staff to participate as well. And I am hopeful that after reading the survey comments, members of the board would like to get involved additionally. For those of you who know my son, you know that he has a strong love of all things technology. So I'll leave you with thoughts from those who have provided the fuel to this fire. Bill Gates has said, your most unhappy customers are your greatest source of learning. And of course, Steve Jobs, because the ones who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who do. Thank you for your consideration, and I hope you can do better for these students.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.
Erica,
do you have a question?
Well, I just had a comment.
I'll
make the comment. I'm usually out of order anyway, so I'll just continue as I have.
But you know, we talked about wanting to focus on our norms.
Well,
do you have a question?
It's not a norm to follow up with somebody that just commented. So it may be a norm in your world, but I think it's a good idea. I think, can we get a response as to, are we going to respond to, she's asked us a direct question about the task force. I think it's okay to ask staff, are we going to follow up with that and possibly look at it?
Well, when I, again, read for public comment, we say that the appropriate person will get back to that individual, and I'm sure that Dr. Gordon will do that. So thank you, Lisa. Yep. All right, Mrs. Milk.
Al D'Ambrosio.
Welcome. Thanks. There's a mic down at that end.
Lisa, let me know that we get back.
Okay. I'm sure you
do. Alfie Ambrosio. As a dad, I want to teach my kids to be great learners. I set out ultimately responsible for their education, so I tell them how much I loved school and how I was curious and whatever interested me, I could learn about how things work. And by paying attention to school, I could apply what I've learned as an adult someday. And amazingly, this actually resonates with my kids. They're 5 and 7, not 5 or 7. Forget it, right? So my son comes home from school one day with this contemplative, really pained look on his face. I ask him, how was your day at school? And finally, he asked me, what did you do with the pumpkin after Halloween? And he's smart, and he's really observant. So he knows, he's a compost. But somehow he's been convinced that he don't. And he goes into this holier-than-thou, clearly regurgitated rant about how if you throw the pumpkin away, we're killing the penguins and polar bears. And so now it's almost as if he thinks I'm some kind of animal murderer. And this came from a PBL. And there's so many more examples of this. So I won't have time to get it tonight, but I can give you so many. So it may not be intentional, but you know, you couple this with this sort of nonstop mirage of climate change alarmism that seems to be kind of working in the curriculum. I mean, I see shades of it in Odyssey. You know, he comes home with worksheets, and it literally is all about climate change, and he has to write in there that it's his job to save the world. And you know, you kind of try to pull out more from what? And ultimately, it's almost like he's saying it's from me. It's like from our generation. It's from business because, you know, if you're doing all these things, then you're ruining the climate and it won't support life. It's as if he's put the fear of he's going to die unless he controls me and everybody else's behaviors. It's really extreme. And this idea that he has to save the world, first of all, that's like a job for Superman, right? I mean, you know, Superman's a fictional character and he's not even human. And he's a 7-year-old boy. It's a lot to ask of a 7-year-old boy to save the world. So you can imagine the alarm that I feel when he comes home saying so many things like this. It's truly disturbing, especially when I feel it's almost an affront to me because of the way it comes out. So my question to the board, and I guess you're not allowed to answer it now or something, but I really mean it not rhetorically, is how should I react? Because if I freak out, which I kind of want to do, he might freak out. He might stop sharing his day with me, right? And that's so critical to his development. So healthy for him to want to share his day with his dad. You know, otherwise he might say, "Okay, well, this freaks out daddy, so I'm not going to pay attention in school or something." Now he's what, like disruptive or class clown? Gets F's and doesn't pay attention. You know, that can't happen either. Right? We can't have that. So you know, I really want to know what I'm supposed to do. Is it kind of making my job as a dad harder? But I can't let that stand. I can't let him come home from school saying stuff like that. And I've met with Dr. Gordon. We talked about it with some other, you know, concerned parents. But it's clearly still happening. And I just really wanted to share this heightened concern that I and a lot of other people have in the district.
Appreciate that. Thank you. I do have a question to clarify. Have you spoken with the teacher as well directly?
I didn't speak with the teachers directly. I wasn't sure exactly where it came from, and I didn't want to call people out because
I'm
trying not to freak out. Honestly, he sees the look on my face, and so that he's sort of, well, in school, you know, so I don't know if it's like from a coach or, you know, specific teachers. So,
okay.
And I didn't want to, you know, press him, right, because exactly what I just said. So, but that's why, I kind of talked to Dr. Gordon and some others in the administration.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Mrs. Milk?
Amy Kaminsky.
Good evening. Welcome. Thanks. Right over here is great. Yep. Just want to pick up the mic.
Yes, I'm
going to
read this from my little. So, good evening. Thank you for affording me the opportunity to speak to you tonight. My name is Amy Kaminsky, and I live in Glen Ellyn with my husband and our 3 children. We moved here almost 12 years ago when my oldest son was not quite 2. And since day one, we have been embraced by the amazing community of Glen Ellyn. On more than one occasion, we have been on the receiving end of the grace, generosity, and acceptance of this town. Most notably in August of 2007, when our youngest child, our daughter Kate, was born. Not only was she born 6 weeks prematurely, but she was diagnosed at birth with Down syndrome. and required a 5-week hospitalization stay. This town literally surrounded my family and picked us up and carried us in the weeks and months that followed, involving taking me to the hospital before I could drive, watching my children, tons of visits to my daughter, presents for my children, over 50 meals for my family. It was amazing. And from that day one, we felt that our daughter was loved and accepted by the people of Glenelg. Sadly, we feel that love and acceptance has not extended to her schooling. Kate has been in a District 41 school for the past 5.5 years, with the exception of the 2 years prior where she was sent to District 16 by District 41. And she has spent all of that time in a self-contained classroom. While we appreciate all the tireless work her teachers, therapists, and aides have given to her over the years, we feel this seclusion has had a detrimental effect on her overall. By placing her in a small classroom of not more than 10 children, usually more like 6, all of whom are children with special needs, District 41 has restricted her access to typically developing peers who can provide invaluable modeling of typical behavior. As a result, Kate does not feel comfortable in large groups and oftentimes shuts down when she's in this environment. My husband and I appreciate the school district and all of the skills that the teachers have helped Kate master over the last 5.5 years, but we feel that she deserves so much more. She deserves to interact daily with children her age in a typical environment, in a typical classroom, where she can learn from other children who can be role models to her, and where she can also be a role model to those children. She would be able to learn what is appropriate and not appropriate behavior in a classroom setting. She would be able to learn the different social behaviors that are appropriate in the classroom. She deserves to be seen as simply another 8-year-old girl, not an 8-year-old second grader, and not as a kid with Down syndrome. Kate and all of the other children in the self-contained special education classrooms do not live in a self-contained special ed world. They deserve the right to learn how to maneuver in the world that they live in.
30 seconds.
Building relationships, gaining the social and educational skills that will make them a productive member of Glenelg community and the world. We strongly urge you to hire an inclusion consultant or specialist to assess our schools and classrooms and teach us how we can be much more inclusive in our education settings. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy.
Courtney Osterholm?
Was that correct? Welcome.
My name is Courtney Osterholm. I have 2 kids at Ben Franklin, and I also have a 4-year-old daughter. She was in the early childhood special education program at Forest Lawn last year. And my husband and I decided to remove her halfway through the school year because we were dissatisfied with the services. She was in a self-contained classroom. She didn't seem to be growing. We then decided to enroll her in a private preschool with an aide part of the time, and a year later she has been thriving. She is around regular kids. She is in a regular classroom with regular kids who are great peer models, and she is thriving. She's social. She loves school. Her language is developing. She is full of joy, and she's a happy little girl. And I feel like it was the best decision we could have made for her. I also know 2 other families have had this situation where they took their child out of the preschool program, the early childhood preschool program, and put them in regular classrooms, regular preschool classrooms with an aide to help them. And their children are also thriving instead of just surviving. I plan to send my child to kindergarten at District 41 in 2017, and I would like to be part of a solution based on some of the comments on the survey for the special education survey results. I would like to be part of a committee or any kind of a solution so we can start making some positive changes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Colleen Hinman.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Colleen Heineman, and I'm a member of the Facilities Task Force. I wanted to go on record tonight at this board meeting to be a voice for all the parents and community members that believe in full-day kindergarten, want to see the Hadley portables removed, and want the deficiencies in all our facilities addressed. A 2009 Facility Task Force also discussed similar issues as the portables and facility deficiencies. In fact, that task force used almost the exact same terminology when considering a need for flexible facilities that can adapt to changing instructional and programmatic needs, as well as community traditions like community schools and sustainable green buildings. What our task force proposes is another study showing what our schools are lacking and have been lacking for a number of years. I've heard the argument from community members. My kids learned in the portables and were fine, and that the teachers teach not in facilities. I completely agree. The teachers, staff, students, and our community make Glen Ellyn a wonderful place to live and learn. I would love for our facilities to live up to our reputation for having great schools and be a true reflection of District 41. There's an older set of kids that were just fine in the portables in 2004 when they were first installed. And I'm sure the six-pack that was installed in 2007 was in great shape 9 years ago. I was surprised to learn that DuPage Regional Office of Education considers these classrooms temporary solutions and requires the district to submit a plan for removal / replacements of the units annually. These temporary buildings are not a permanent solution, and I have to imagine as they continue to age, the upkeep to pass inspections by the ROE will become costly. To the people that say, let them be kids, half-day kindergarten is enough, and they have their whole lives to go to school or work all day, I agree, let's let them be kids. I do not want my child to go to all-day kindergarten so they can have time for more literacy and math, but rather so students and teachers can have a chance to breathe. So kindergartners can still have time for play-based learning, socialization, creativity, and recess. Let's let them develop a love for learning and give them the time in which to do it.
1 minute.
But I am completely opposed to implementing all-day kindergarten without the proper facilities. We do not have adequate space, and cramming more kids into our buildings would be detrimental to our current programs and would result in the displacement of staff and resources. As I have only recently become involved in the goings-on of District 41, I have noticed that the negative opinions and thoughts seem to prevail in public forums as well as social media. I want you to know that many people want all-day kindergarten and nice facilities. And yes, everything that we are discussing costs a lot of money. But at some point, we need to stop forming task force and address these issues, or the board 5 years from now will be listening to another facilities recommendation as we continue to age and fall behind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Saylor.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Elizabeth Saylor, and I did email the board, and many of you encouraged me to say some of my stuff for record. I do live in Lincoln. We don't have any kids in the district yet, but we've got a lot of years of District 41 ahead of us, so I want to get involved. I want to start by saying I do think that full-day kindergarten should be adopted by District 41. I feel it's important in order for our children to keep up with the demands imposed by the Common Core curriculum. It is not about keeping my child occupied or substituting for my child care. It's about providing time for the play-based activities and learning that build upon the core curriculum. I know the surrounding districts have imposed a fee to help pay for the cost of implementing full-day. So I don't think it would come as a surprise to the district if people had to pay for that. I know current enrichment programs available cost close to $1,500 or $2,000 for just a 2 to 3 day a week program. And I'm sure there are many children in this district that cannot afford to take advantage of those enrichment programs. Many of the surrounding districts that do charge a fee also supplement or waive a fee for those in need, and I believe that that would allow more children to take advantage of this additional learning opportunity. I also wanted to address some of the deficiencies in the school. You know, in the task force, we talked about a lot of deficiencies. I'm not going to go into detail at any of them because they're all in the report. I just wanted to go on record to say it frustrates me when they are dismissed as something we should be considering critically because we shouldn't always believe the administrators and staff. As a task force, we spent time touring the schools in person and via video for those of us who couldn't be available. We did ask the administration and faculty for their opinions, but we witnessed most of the issues in person and in speaking with fellow task force members and students currently enrolled in schools. Besides, why not strongly consider what the administration and staff consider to be the issues when they are the ones witnessing the issues every day? I am aware that solving the issues at Hadley and elementary schools and implementing folding kindergarten will be a big undertaking and potentially a costly one. It cannot happen overnight or even in a few years. What I'd like to see is a concrete long-term plan or timeline that can be put into action and followed by this district and the board. Just like any goal you want to achieve, you need to have a plan of how to get there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Moak?
Derek Leganski?
Was that the correct pronunciation?
That's close.
In the ballparks.
It's kind of a complicated spell. I didn't prepare anything. Our son, Quint, is over at Lincoln. We lived in Wheaton for about 12 years. And, I'm sorry, Ben Franklin. That's part of the issue. we lived in Wheaton for 12 years. Quinn had a stroke in utero. He has cerebral palsy and some developmental issues. When we were at Wheaton in the pre-K program, he was in a fully integrated school. His sister attended with him. Quinn presented in the music program with the other kids. He ate lunch with the other kids. Our first year, he's a first grader now. Our two middle girls are over at Lincoln, and our oldest is at Hadley. When we first went over, he was in, I guess it's called the CASE program. He was over in Lombard at Manor Hill in a contained classroom. He since went over to Ben Franklin, and he's in a totally self-contained classroom. Quinn eats lunch alone every day. Quinn is not involved in first grade field trips. He's not involved in the class, first grade class music programs. He's a very social kid. He's about the happiest kid you'd ever want to meet. He's nonverbal. He can't tell you he's happy, so he smiles to show he's happy. He can't walk, but he tries every moment of every day to walk. Amy's daughter, Kate, pushes him pretty hard to do that while they're in school. Glen Ellen's been a fantastic town for us. The fact that we kind of treat the least able of these kids a little bit less or a little bit differently than the rest of the kids is very disappointing. We have the resources. I think you'll find from the folks who spoke here today that parents of kids like Quinn, kids like Kate, kids who need a little extra push, these aren't kids to be tolerated. They're kids to be encouraged and included. They're not kids to put up with. They're kids who not only are going to show you a heck of a lot on their own, they're going to help the other kids as well learn to grow. It's not a closed society. It shouldn't be a closed classroom. When these kids go out in the world, Quinn's around people every day. He's the most social kid you'd ever want to meet, except for the 7 hours or so he's at school. People react to Quinn incredibly positively whenever they come across him. Other kids at school aren't getting that opportunity because they never see Quinn. They never interact with Quinn. These aren't necessarily problems of a lack of resources, I wouldn't think. I think it's more a question of the allocation of resources. And if you look across at the parents in the room tonight, we're speaking, you'll see a lot of us, there's only one of us here. That's because usually there's someone else at home taking care of the other child with special needs. But to a person who spoke here tonight, I don't think you'll find a more proactive, a more fierce group of parents out there. We have to fight the fight every day, and we'll continue to fight it. And I think what you're hearing about a task force and kind of getting the right mix of folks together, you're going to find a group who's probably going to work incredibly hard for as long as you ask to get that done, to come up with good solutions, to allocate the resources that are there in the best way possible.
30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Quinn's teachers are fantastic. They do a great job, but to a large extent, I think, I don't want to say they're flying blind, but they need direction. I'm on the board of Easter Seals, DuPage, and Fox Valley. I'm a little bit spoiled. Our sole mission is helping kids like this. Day in, day out, that's what we're doing. I wish, I hope, and I trust that, you know, folks in this room can refocus and focus a little bit better those resources to where they need to be. Glen Ellyn's a fantastic town. It's great. We like our neighbors a lot more than our neighbors in Wheaton. But in any event, there are a lot of things we can do better. This is something we can and should do a lot better. A district's only as good as how much it helps the least able of its kids out there. And these kids aren't less able, they're just differently abled. And I know that sounds like a catchphrase, but that's on us as a community to help focus those assets and resources in the right direction. It's not being done. I think you've got a room full of people who want to help you get it done. So.
Thanks very much, Derek. Thank you. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Mike Schultz. I have two sons at Lincoln. My first grader, Tommy, he has ASD. And 2 years ago at this time, he was in a contained classroom at Forest Glen. And he had actually been asked, he had been in another preschool, he'd been asked to leave because they didn't have the resources to teach him properly. He came to Forest Glen and was in a contained classroom. At the end of that year, his teacher, Jeannie Niels, saw that he served well by going into be included in an open classroom. And so we pushed for that, and we worked very closely with the principal, vice principal at Lincoln. And so we made the move to have him go to a kindergarten at Lincoln. He had a full-time aide. And he's thrived in those 2 years being part of a classroom of his peers. He has grown socially in ways that we could never have imagined at that time. And so I just want to put my voice in the benefits of that inclusion. You heard the stories tonight about the need to work on that and to promote that. And I also think the kids in his class have benefited as well from him being part of that. I think that diversity of education is important as well. So, like the other parents here, I'd be happy to throw my hat in the ring and help figure out how to do this, but I think it's a very important part of the education process.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you to everybody.
Well, I had a letter. I'm sorry. I forgot. I had a letter that someone emailed that asked to and I can send it to me. If you send it to me personally, I don't know if it's going to
We can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Don't use this. You're going to speak up.
Letter they said they have a conflict this evening and asked if the comments be read during public participation. And it is from Marty Boyd. So, and I think this is short, so I'm not going to go into it. Like, tell me if I do go over there.
You're okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What is my primary concern about the district? That is like asking, what is your one issue in the upcoming presidential election? Neither are one-word answers. Two of my answers are, number one, academics, and number two, balance. Is there a true balance in how kids work and learn? Our children are learning about group dynamics at an early age. For my family, by second grade, my children realize that group work means one or two kids will carry the group or do the bulk of the work. Other kids will contribute a little, but not as much as they would if they were working alone. Our district seems to believe that the only way that adults work anymore is in groups. That is far from reality. So my question to you as board members are, is there overkill on group work? Are our kids given equal opportunities to work independently in the classroom? In my mind, that brings up the district administration's constant promotion of PBLs. We all know that PBLs consume weeks of time for both teachers and the students. On several occasions, the end product was a PowerPoint with minimal words, incomplete sentences, poor punctuation, and light content. My children were more interested in the visual aspects like formatting slides and doing transitions, perhaps even because they knew the topic that was, even they knew that the topic was trivial. Examples of trivial topics include living with coyotes, learning about the local problem of feral cats in animal shelters, and how to attract more bass players for 8th grade orchestra. Seriously, is this the best we can do? Are these trivial topics examples of the high standards of the Common Core? To me as a parent, this is a red flag. If these are problems, is valuable time during the school day the best way to solve them, or is this practice to make up a problem and then make up solutions? So in closing, our kids are given equal opportunity to work independently. Are our kids given equal opportunity to work independently, and is there a bias against academic content? Is there a bias against classical writers such as H.W. Longfellow or Robert Louis Stevenson? Can our elementary kids draw a map of the United States and label each state and its capital? Can our elementary kids name five American heroes? Thank you for your attention, and I will look forward to responses from the school board members. Sincerely, Martin Ford.
Thank you. Was that emailed to us? That was not emailed to us, was it?
Sir? No, she sent it to my personal email, so I'll forward it to me.
Thank you. Then she can get it out to us. All right. Thank you.
If I could make a...
Yes.
Statement. Appreciate all the feedback. And whomever quoted, I think it was Steve Jobs, around looking at those areas of our greatest weakness and shining the light on those areas and continuing to improve our outcomes for our students. You have my word that we will continue to work on this and that I will bring a group of parents together to have a conversation on the topic of special education. That's mainly what I'm speaking about here. I absolutely believe in Michelle Gallo, and if Michelle were here, Michelle is our director of student services, which oversees special education. I know Michelle believes in an inclusive environment. How do we get there for a vast majority of our kids? You know, I'd say all kids, but how do we get there for a vast majority of our kids, and what does that look like for each kid? Because each kid is absolutely different in their needs and their... So you have my commitment that we will work together, that we will come together, we'll have further conversations on this. I'll reach out to Michelle, Karen Carlson, and plan for our next steps going forward regarding that. I sincerely appreciate you bringing those to the table tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Mrs. Milk. All right, discussion items. We have three. School board calendar, which is not the district calendar, but school board meeting calendar, which we have to establish. So,
yeah, per school code, the board must set the meeting dates for 2016-17. In the board packet, recommended three different options. Current option, the Monday, the second and fourth, or another Monday, the first and third Monday, or an alternative one, the second and fourth. And why we're recommending the second and fourth? Because the Glenbard District meets on the second and fourth Monday and the Village of Glen Ellen. I know I've heard others say more opportunities to have different entities participating in board meetings. So this is for the board to give me direction on what their desires are regarding the two meetings a month. And here's a crazy one. We can go down to one meeting a month. Just joking. That was just a personal plea. Not going to happen. So any feedback on a meeting date, a Monday as we currently have it, or the first and third Monday, or a second and fourth Tuesday?
Well, I know I brought this up a few years ago about... I'm sorry.
Kirk, did you...
I didn't hear you. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I brought this up a few years ago, probably 3 years ago, about there being opportunities for our board to either attend other district meetings, including 87, since we're feeder to them, and being able to hear, you know, what's going on in their meetings, even though we read the minutes and that type of thing. And so I'd certainly be open to looking at flipping that with the recognition and the opportunity that it would provide, especially for other community members to become, because they want to go to village meetings. We're often obviously on the same night, and so it does create a little bit of a conflict if you want to stay involved. So Kurt? I'd be open to that. Kurt?
I'm good with Tuesday. When I was on the park board, we did Tuesdays. You know, it's better when we're here until 1 o'clock in the morning. It's easier on my week to be at Wednesday versus Wednesday. So
get you through the week
a
little quicker.
I think for us, from a standpoint, what I like, it gave me an extra day to read the material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it gave me an extra night
and we get a lot of material. So, you know, so that's why I'm at with that.
Okay. Others?
I'm fine with it being Tuesday. I know you said that Mondays are kind of hard too, so Tuesday just kind of gives you an extra day. But the only thing I would say, if you do decide to move it to Tuesday, I noticed the proposed calendar, I think it's the Tuesday of Thanksgiving is our meeting. So maybe the agenda.
We make one adjustment.
You know, I don't know either. Not saying don't have the meeting that day, but make it kind of a. I don't know.
We can work around that one. Yeah, I would doubt.
Since we'll be out of school. Well, so we're out of school, the staff's office.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know what we want to.
Yeah. I appreciate you bringing that one up.
And there's a flip in October, too. On our regular meeting calendar with the holiday, we always have to do the Tuesday of that for Columbus Day. Mm-hmm. So that picks up the regular one, but to your point, we'd have to adjust.
Budget adjustment.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do think sometimes. One of the things I was going to say is a lot of times we have Monday off. And if a board meeting falls on that, I think it's hard for staff or people to change their off that day. So Tuesdays may afford less conflicts with that. Sorry.
Perfect.
So I agree with everything they said about Tuesday, except if you end up with board members who travel as part of their professional life, they're going to be out of town more Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It kind of starts out usually with Mondays and Fridays when people are in town. Mm-hmm. So you might limit the pool of people that can actively participate on the board by putting it in the middle of the week.
Great perspective.
And not something that anybody brought up, but I think it'd be great to do it on Friday for exactly the reason that Kurt said, because you can go late and we can sleep in late the next day.
If we're going to negotiate, we'll go Friday one meeting a month. Patrick, I know you were...
to what Dean said.
That business piece.
Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, that's important. Drew?
I agree with that. For me, Wednesdays would be very difficult. Tuesdays. Either of the Monday options would work for me.
Okay.
But the Tuesday would be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Joe?
I'm going to agree with the last three statements that were made for a business week. Monday board meetings tend to be better, and I would choose the same that we've been on.
Okay.
I hear everybody else's concerns.
For the.
I'm not saying there's a consequence if you.
Yeah.
Some professional consequence if you do that.
Right. And that is a real concern because my own travel in the springtime is always midweek too. I hadn't really thought about that. Is there some opportunity around doing it the first and third? I know that butts up against, that's on Tuesday. So the first and third Monday would be the opposite of District 87 and the Village of Glen Ellen. So we keep it on the Monday, but we do the opposite weeks.
I think that's a great idea.
As a compromise.
If the board wants to do that because it allows you to go to some of those other meetings.
Yeah.
Not that board members need to go to other meetings, but we'd like to sometimes, and we really can't. So,
yeah. Was there a reason why the second board was missing?
I think just what we've been doing.
Just, I'm curious if there's like a reason for that.
It's been a long standing. Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
If you're going to do the first and third, I don't know why you're doing January 3rd,
I should say. We just loaded it into the system, so we will. We'll pull that piece out. It'd be like the Thanksgiving one. There'll be a few little pieces.
No, I understand. So why are we doing it that week, anyways?
Yeah.
Because the week before, you guys are going to prepare on December 31st.
Right.
Yeah.
We can make those
discussions about today or all.
Well, I just said we're going to change.
I think generally the.
I picked out whatever changed.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. But it's really about that. Is it the first and third Monday, or is it the second and for Tuesday, and then we can make some minor adjustments.
Can I make a consistent decision that we go the first and third Mondays and move forward? If there's any good objections to it?
Yeah, none for me. Try first and third, ship to that.
I'll just get that January 3rd out.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Why don't we have an extra board meeting? Why don't you take the January 3rd out?
There you go.
Okay. And then
I get one wish, January 17th.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we will go with the first and third Mondays. Board member vacancy. Dean Elger has notified the board and the superintendent that his intent to resign his position from District 41 effective at the end of the meeting on June 13th. Tonight, and then we're going to give Dean an opportunity to talk about that that resignation, but tonight the board needs to talk about the process they want to put in place. An aspect of that process is that all community members are welcome to submit an application and to the Board of Education. What the board needs to do is set a selection interview process and timeline. Administration brought forward a draft of a timeline and a process, so we need to have that feedback. But I'll hand it over to Mr. Elger for a quick conversation on why are you leaving us.
Okay. Well, it's with heavy heart when it comes to the board. I've enjoyed my service on the board, and I complain all the time about the length of the meetings, but I actually love coming to meetings. I love all the work that we do in between. I'm very fortunate that my wife 20 years ago took me hiking in Zion National Park, and we fell in love with it and kept going back. A couple of years ago, we bought a piece of property next to it, and our intent was to retire there and build a house there someday. In the interim, our last son at home decided he was going to go to the University of Utah, and so that puts it 4.5 hours away from where we're going to be. So we've decided to go ahead and build the house and move to the to that part of the country. So I'm doing it to kind of follow with the family to make it easier on it, and it's a little bit of a culmination of a lifelong dream coming about 10 years early. So very fortunate in that, but. I feel it's a good time right now for the board because I'll have this time to be able to get another member on board and be able to work with them for next year. So,
well, we sincerely appreciate all your time, your commitment, and your dedication to the board. So thank you, and we're excited for you and your family.
Thanks.
So thank you. Sincerely appreciate everything you've done.
We will miss you.
And like all things, now we got to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
With the process. They didn't have a nice segue in there to to do anything with that. But board members, I've attached a proposed process. Is there some feedback that you would like? Do you like the process? Do you not like the process? What works for you? What doesn't work for you? Please.
While you're thinking that, the one thing that I think is important for the community to know is I will not participate in selecting the next board member. I think it's important for the 6 remaining board members to decide on who should join the board. So I'll help if they want the help, but I'm not going to have an active vote in that selection.
And that would be a similar process for Sam Black. Previous board president moved on. He participated but was not a voting member. The board members' feedback on the process?
Well, we have a pretty tight time frame because by the policy, Illinois School Code, just for some clarity, once a vacancy is announced, which is what Dean did in terms of his resignation, and he you submit your resignation as a board member to the secretary. Given that Dean is the secretary, he sent it to Paul Gordon and myself. So we received it, and then the clock starts to tick. So we have 45 days after the vacancy arises, which it has, to determine that next individual. So the time frame is set for us, and then between now and the date, which is June 17th, we have a meeting on June 13th, a regular board meeting, and so it made some sense to try and, I guess, from what you put together, to back it up to that meeting since it's
correct.
Our next board meeting, and maybe after the 17th if we extended it, which we can't. So,
feedback, thoughts about the process that we've laid out?
Process, one thing, dates. The process is fine. The
date, okay.
May 26th, Thursday date.
Okay. 26.
Didn't we do these on a Saturday?
We did last time. It was an enjoyable Saturday morning.
Well, this one we provided 2 options: one on a Saturday and one during the week.
We did. We extended. We did a Saturday from I believe like 8 till 1-ish. And then we had one other evening with like 2 or 3 candidates.
Mm-hmm. I think what would be prudent would be wait to see the number of candidates you have, and then set dates that the board, the six of us, we could meet.
Okay.
But that's fine. Well, except that it would be difficult.
May 20th, so we're
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe we should come up with potential dates.
That's what I'd rather do, because anytime we.
I think for the candidates,
if you're comfortable with a Saturday,
there.
If you want to give us a Saturday date, because it did work. I mean, it was nice to be able to work through a number of interviews on one day.
Well, just quickly, the May 31st date is the day after Memorial Day, correct? So that's
correct.
One date you've asked, is everybody else good with it? I would ask that. You can't make it the May 28th date, because that is Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
Show up, show up. So that would put you at the following Saturday, which is June.
That's also school's 4th. Already out. And
June 4th.
Mm-hmm.
So to do a Saturday with this timeline, it's May 21st, the day after closing, or June 4th, the Saturday after school.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
correct? Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that school ending matters, Stephanie. I heard you saying, pointing that out. Perhaps it does. Maybe it doesn't. But it's either one of those two Saturdays.
Well, and
would a Saturday work best for everybody? Maybe we start there.
I think you should do two dates and give me see how number of candidates you have.
Saturday.
If
you
can sit here for an hour, I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you want to give the flexibility to
pick. I think there's some flexibility for the candidates, like you said, Joe, to keep in mind as well, and maybe an option of a weekend morning or early afternoon and an evening is fair to them as well. Maybe we can truncate the Saturday morning, maybe not do an 8-to-1, but you know, shorten it up a little bit depending on the number of applicants, candidates. I'm inclined
give me
to
some feedback around June 4th, just a couple people.
I'm fine.
Out.
I'm out.
Okay, we need all board members.
Yeah, everybody
so,
has to be.
So yeah, everybody would.
Well, instead of maybe doing this, could we send Nancy?
Yeah, we thought it would be easier,
Paul,
but obviously it's not.
Yeah, this is like wordsmithing. So could we organize an email to go back to you, Paul, and to Nancy, and organize it from there, knowing at least we have the template on the date. So
is it too late to do interviews for June? Like, do we want to get paged out that far, or do we want to have it? How much time do we want to put under so we know what date?
Right. Paul, maybe you can send.
I think it's got to be. Yeah, I think it's got to be between this May 23rd and probably.
Why not the week of the June
6th? I'm okay with that.
I mean, there should be an expectation that the candidates should understand that if they get selected, that their meeting is the Monday.
Yeah, I mean, we can go all the way through that week of June 10th. Don't go for it.
I was going to say, but the vacancies have to be filled by the 17th.
17th.
Yes.
Yeah. Or it goes over.
Goes to the regional board of education.
We can call a special board meeting to see.
Because there's.
Yeah, the next board meeting is until the 27th, though. So,
I guess that's what I was wondering. Yeah. I mean, but that doesn't do us any good if we have to fill it.
Yeah.
That gives us another week, though, right? That gives us the week of the 13th also.
All right. So how about I do this? We will just send out some dates, and we'll try to. But we need everybody there. So I'll send you a number of dates. All right. It's kind of where I'm at. So we'll send that out tomorrow morning if board members could reply to us pretty quickly.
Yep.
Does that work?
Yep.
You're gonna get some small
windows. I know. We got a short amount of time. We can blame one person for
this. We have to be flexible.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll get those out tomorrow morning.
Okay.
All right. Community Facility Task Force report discussion.
Thank you for your patience.
Yes.
We are here.
Oof. Tonight is the opportunity for board members to ask task force members questions, to give their feedback around the report, the conversation that occurred 2 weeks ago, and again, most importantly, for board members to ask task force members questions. So with that, any board members want to give any of their, just a reflection based off of what they read and the feedback that they received from the task force members 2 weeks ago.
Start?
Yeah, they made it. Should we go down to Joe this time?
Are
we good? All right, good night, everybody. Have a great night.
I like the way it started the last time, so.
Yeah, I like that. Joe, you want to?
Oh, you want to go my way?
Yeah.
Go in the middle. What kind of debate, Joe? I wasn't great. No, I like going left. Just some overall comments.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the report was well written. I think what the task force did was take something that was intangible and try to make it tangible. And you had a criteria and a weighting system that really brought everything together, and I don't think that was easy, but what you guys formulated was outstanding. Some of the conclusions that I got that, you know, kind of, I don't want to say reading between the lines, but I think some things that seem imperative is that we're going to do it within our footprint. You know, we're not going to go outside the footprint we currently have. I think that was overwhelming. My questions mostly come around the full-day kindergarten part of the recommendation. There's this balance that I see. I asked, I guess maybe I didn't ask the question, so I'll ask it again. My mind's not working well. But academic research, was there, I know Paul presented to you guys some academic research. Did you guys go over that in length about the benefits?
No, we didn't go down the academic piece.
Okay.
No, we didn't talk about that report.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was provided to the board.
Yeah, yeah. We were.
The focus was not whether the all-day kindergarten should be incorporated or not. This was what are the facility impacts, what are the ramifications if it was.
Did you guys talk about how our neighboring communities are offering full-day kindergarten and that it could be perceived that people, when coming to the western suburbs, may say, hey, this is a reason to go to Wheaton over Glen Allen?
There were a lot of conversations about that, but again, the crux of the study, the focus of the study was, what are the impacts on the district if you were to bring that in? It did not discuss the merits of, should we do it or should we not do it?
But you guys did discuss those.
Obviously, there was a lot of commentary. There's a lot of sentiment among the committee members. They'd love to see all the kindergarten. So, but really, that was outside of the...
No, I know it is, but I'm asking questions that were, you know, outside.
Well, the answer to your question is yes.
Yes, there was a discussion. Because I'm looking at it from a market standpoint. You know, there's the academic standpoint. You know, there's the academic research that says certain things, you know, about leveling off, about at-risk children and all this, and then there's the market aspect of it that your neighbors are doing it, and then the taxpayers are worried about their, you know, paying more taxes, clearly, but also, are you suddenly impacting the value of our schools? That's the reason people say they moved to Glen Allen for the schools. There's a lot of other good reasons to move to Glen Allen also. So what kind of impact of having full-day kindergarten or not having full-day kindergarten has on our community as a whole and the impact of value to the real estate of people's homes is one that is an important aspect. So it's kind of because that's the crux of the matter is you guys kind of, it was well said by the speakers today that came up during the public comment that this is something that we have to plan for. We have to have a timeline for, but we also recognize that you just don't want to jam it into what we currently have in our footprint. So how it's going to be done is for this board to work with the professionals, the architects, and all that. So, I mean, I'm speaking more than I'm asking questions, but they answer
nope.
questions about mm-hmm. the research and the discussion around full-day K, and I think that's really the part that I wanted to know about.
And Joe, I think it...
I did want to speak on the home balance project.
Yes.
You know, I had included that in my original email to the board.
Yes.
And I got a few responses saying that the person said that people aren't asking about full day versus half day. I did have a discussion. So my mother just moved to Easton, like speaking to her neighbors, and she has quite a few neighbors on her street. And she has said to me that actually quite a few of the new homeowners were pretty shocked that we didn't have full day kindergarten, and they actually moved in They certainly asked about it because they assumed a community like Glen Ellen had it. And I know you said that one of the homes almost, the sale almost didn't happen because they found out that we didn't have full day and they considered moving somewhere nearby. So, I mean, I don't think it's something potential that could easily affect it, but obviously it's on their minds. But right. I think that sometimes if they aren't inquiring about it when they move here, they probably didn't really have it because it's around the community.
Thank you.
Total, but definitely the discussion that is being handed, I get it. And I guess the other part of that discussion is kind of what you brought up in your public comments, too, and I asked this question last time we met about the tuition component. Mm-hmm. And I believe, Paul, this is more of a comment again, but the, around tuition, it's mandated that for those who qualify that there's a waiver or a partial waiver of fees. So that's already mandated. Mm-hmm. It was the way it was worded was that we would do it. No, it's mandated. We would do it. It's by statute. But there was, and I'll ask the same question because not all the same audience was here, but you guys did not discuss level of a fee that could be allocated to help facilitate this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks. And I just want to thank everybody for their work because I mean, I said at the beginning, when you read the report, it's totality. I mean, to take all the variables that are out there and all the problems that you guys stated in our schools and to break it down into the metrics that you did to get your solutions is making something that was very complex and making it more tangible. And I appreciate that.
Thank you, Joe.
I have some questions. So,
okay.
I'm sorry, he had a comment.
I apologize.
I have a follow-up to your discussion. Yes. So I've got on my blog one or two families that have got young ones that moved here knowing that they were going to come into the system. And actually, my next-door neighbors, their teachers, there's never been a thought process. We've talked a couple times, but they moved here. And having it or not having it was secondary to moving to a good community. And, you know, my first thought, common sense-wise, would be I've been here for 19 years, and all the people who've moved to this community in those 19 years and beforehand, ever since full day kindergarten started, you know, in whatever, Western or wherever, it's not been an issue. In, you know, maybe it's an issue for one comment, maybe more comments, but it just, to me, it doesn't seem like the ultimate answer has to be, you know, that. Have it or die. Okay. And the other thing was about tuition. We didn't get into it, but you remember about a year ago I presented, I did a study myself, 14 districts around Glen Ellen. And everyone charged at least fees. I don't think I ever actually handed you guys, you know, my studies, but you know, I've got 14 districts. I went up to Wheaton, and you're probably all aware of Wheaton charges, I think, $4,000 a year. Addison, I think, is $250-$300 a month, something like that. So it does vary, but you know, I would like to brought up and we'll bring up during you know, festivities over the 9 months, but it really wasn't our main idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think those studies also showed that we've seen, that the enrollment may have started around 90%, mm-hmm. but it gradually, even with the tuition, it gradually grew to 98, 99, almost 100%. So
Dr. Dieter?
Yeah, so this is a great time to bring this up. I think we've heard two different, somewhat dichotomous and polar views of the same topic. And, you know, first, hats off to Lori and Tom for organizing this and getting us through several months in a fairly objective manner. So I'd like to say thank you for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But also, back to the point of some polar views and dichotomous views, there's an incredible selection bias, and I would hope that the board would recognize that the task force is somewhat pre-selected. And, you know, there's very little in the scientific method to get this as a random sampling of the community for which we can take these rankings and say they reflect the taxpayers. We have given you... collectively, we have given you a number of choices, but And so trying to instill a specific rank order on any of them may not be reflective of the community. It's reflective of our very small, very selected group with obviously very polar views on things. And I would just caution the board in trying to apply any statistical inference on any of these things and see that they reflect the taxpayers.
I appreciate that.
I was going to go to my point is we have something here, and to Liza's point, how are we going to move this forward? And we could, we can run parallel paths here. We can run the information and the recommendations, and we can ask questions to the analysts or the analysts that you guys put forward to it. And we should, and we can continue to ask those questions. But I think it also goes to what you're saying is we need to now to take the work that you need to tell us how to take this work that you got and start putting that out in the community so we can hear that feedback. You guys have put together a document, and maybe it is, okay, our next steps is pick the top three, and we're going to, I think Lori or Tom, you guys said you're going to start speaking to those community groups or whatever. Maybe I heard something, but now you start giving us feedback. We were at the meeting, the chamber, and the chamber said this three or this two, or you were at this, the police and firemen's ball or whatever, and you had a booth, and they came back and blah, blah, blah. But it goes to Liza's point of we got to start hitting the execution phase. We can still go down the analytics phase of reviewing this, but if we say number six was off the table and probably not going to get any community buy-in for that, whatever that is, then let's not have those conversations at Rotary and Chambers and all that other stuff. But we need to start honing this down and say, okay, let's start getting that feedback, because if we pick at this and we try to second guess all of the work that you guys have done, we're going to be back where you guys were in 1999, and you have the blue steering committee and blah, blah, blah. So I think it can be a parallel path, but we can still talk about the recommendations. But for me, it's, okay, let's start talking about the execution. What are you guys recommending us to do? Because you guys have something on your table. Do you need money from us to put that out there? Do you need, do you want to have board members speak at different functions and get to, how do we get it to the press? How do we get it to social media? How do we get all this other stuff? Because if we don't start having those conversations with the community in Glen Ellen, this thing is going to fall on deaf ears in 6 months. So you have to keep it in front of them that says, these 20 people, and you guys should be proud of your work and have the 30 names on there and every document that we send, every glossy page that we want to do, or whatever, however you guys want to do it, so people understand that there was 25 to 30 people, your neighbors, that came up with this recommendation. Give us feedback, blah, blah, blah. So if we don't get to the execution phase of your recommendation, unfortunately, all the work that you guys have put into this is just going to fall to the wayside. I think that could be supported by Tom, some of the work that you did for us in that email that you sent the other day that says, what's different from this, from the other four or five? Mm-hmm. You're going to get those. Like you said, you're a long-term resident. You already know, well, why can't we use Main Street? Why can't we use Spring Avenue? Well, boom, here's your bullet points. However you want to do to the execution to get to exactly what you're saying is, 30 people were put in the room. How do we start getting this message out to say, okay, the board is going to start potentially weaning these down, because these 30 people, as a subset of the community, think this is what this district wants to move forward with. Now is your opportunity, community of the whole, through mass publication, through mass, however we want to do it, working with Erica, working with whomever, that says, take this report, read the 2-page executive summary and the 13-page or the 30-page detailed design document. Because we, by fourth quarter next year, the board wants to make a long-term vision that says we're going to land on recommendation one or whatever it is. But
Patrick, can Paul speak to a little bit of that? Because it kind of he wants to give a little bit of...
One of the things that came up at a previous board meeting, and we may have alluded to it, we may have talked about it a little bit in detail, is putting forward a community-wide survey. but highlighting the task force recommendation, really painting that picture of what is the task force and what are their recommendations, but also putting out other pieces, because at the end of the day, we do need to get the larger community presence in on this conversation, but highlight the task force, highlight their recommendation, highlight the pieces that they saw, and also link to the task force report. I think we've got to get this task force report in the hands of many, many people. And the best way we can do that is through a community-wide survey that is outside of just our parents. Because we know somewhere in the range of 70 to 80% of community members are not parents. So it's going to be really important to be able to tell that story to the larger community so that we can get a little bit of that feedback. So that's a piece that I know board members have asked about, that we are already planning to do a community survey, but to add this aspect to it.
It's not only a survey, but it's got to be a talking point when you go talk to to the high school, or when you go to the PTAs. It's always one of your bullet points when you're talking about the wellness program or whatever it is. It's like, okay, one of the bullet points you always have on your card is the facilities task force, and have you reached out to Lori and Tom, if that's what we say it's going to be, or have you reached out to one of these three, Erica's at her chambers thing, or our coffee's on Saturdays. It always should be a point. If we're going to make this a priority for the district, then it should be one of our talking points wherever we go that says, task force, because we want to try to get a common decision by a date.
Patrick, is your question, are these task force members interested in being a part of that community engagement? I'm hearing a question trying to form itself, and I think they're here to respond and answer, so.
It sort of plays in, I think, to what Patrick's driving at. I don't want to work through your mouth, and I'm certainly not speaking on behalf of the rest of the committee, but I have offered in the past to participate in some community engagement. I would be happy to participate in something that the board would coordinate or the chairman would coordinate, where we could educate the community. They could see some of these videos, some of these photographs, hear some of these suggestions, understand what we've seen in going into the schools. Again, boots on the ground, see what we see, hear some of the explanations for why we're coming up with these really big numbers and these really big-sounding projects. And again, I understand that people are going to want to talk. I understand that people are going to want to hear why the $21 million project? Why, again, we just put classrooms down in schools. What do you mean you're going back into schools again? Why? I understand there's building fatigue. We're going to hear these same questions. You know, why not Main Street? Why not Spring Avenue? You know, we can talk about these things, and we can talk about, you know, look, we worked for 9 months in a group, and we had people who didn't have any kids, and we had people whose kids were older, and we had, you know, people who don't have any kids in the district yet. And we worked together, and we got down and dirty, and, we can participate in that. We can show the video. We're not going to march everyone in the community through these schools, but we can talk about what we see. We can talk about how, if you're in a wheelchair, you can't be in the orchestra if you go to Forest West because the orchestra room is in the basement and there's no one here. You know, we can talk about these things. These are problems. These are embarrassments. It's a problem. I mean, if you are in a wheelchair, you can't get psychological counseling at Forest West.
Right.
You have to get it in the hallway. If you say that to a person on the street in Glen Allen who pays, you know, astronomical property taxes, they can't understand. This is not jive with our school district. This is not okay. So these are the kinds of conversations we should be able to have and engage in. And so some of us would be happy to get involved.
So you're saying, yes, there would be an offer of some of that.
Yes.
Can I get Mrs. Clark? I know you've been dying to.
Well, and I just wanted to add, I think that then engaging the community will definitely be part of this process, but I don't know that we're at that point yet. That's where I'm kind of feeling. I feel like we've kind of been given options, and I do think you brought up the survey, which I was going to bring up as well, and you know, we may want to rethink that timeline, because I do wonder a little bit. I mean, we're the task force you guys didn't necessarily, you didn't have a budget, correct? Like, you weren't working within, like, a constraint, like, you have, we have to spend under $50 million or under. So we're now faced with kind of a budget. We also have a new architect. These numbers could maybe change. I don't know if we need to get some input into some of that, but I feel like we need to, the task force has done incredible work and important work to kind of narrow us in on some things. But if you saw even amongst the task force, as far as what we can get support from the community, I think that's what's going to vary. And I think that's what worries me. Like, I want to go to the community with a plan that we can get support for and address, you know, everything that needs to be addressed. And I don't know if we just take, like, doing my engineering math numbers, there's 1,743 registered voters in Glen Ellyn, and using a sample size calculator, you have to get the opinions of 377 people that have a 95% confidence level in your decision. So when we have a task force, and then I'm not diminishing the task force at all. I think what they did was great work, but it's, you know, a small sample size, so I think we need to use the survey and take the task force recommendations. And maybe, I don't want to just say, okay, this was the task force top pick, and then you have the community say, no way, I don't want to spend that much money. I feel like we have to give them the information, say, these are the pieces of it. This is what's important to do, so we truly get that feedback. Because I don't want to say, oh, the community said no to their recommendation. Mm-hmm. I want to know, what does the community like about it? What do they not like about it? And I just think it's important information for us to have, because I don't want to just say we're going to take the recommendation and go out there and convince everyone, because I worry that the people that don't want to be convinced, they're not going to show up to these things. You're not going to necessarily convince them. They just vote at the voting booth. And I think we all agree that things need to be done. We have portables. We have to address it badly. We have to figure out what we're doing for full-day kindergarten. I don't think any of us dispute that. And I want to go about it successfully and take the task force's work. And help that shape what we're doing. But I don't think, at least personally, maybe my fellow board members would disagree. I'm not ready to say, okay, this is the recommendation, we're doing it, let's go. And I don't think that would be fair to the task force either. I think we owe it to the task force to truly, you know, work with our new architect, look at our budget, you know, figure out full-day kindergarten. The task force was tasked with funding full-day kindergarten. I think there's still kind of a debate on the table. Do you charge a fee? Do you not? I know personally,
So there's questions, like you said, underneath it.
So there's questions like that that we as a board have to figure out. Mm-hmm. How we're gonna handle some of those things. Mm-hmm. And
we have Tom and Beck, and then Willie.
This is actually both board members here that are talking. We presupposed that all-day kindergarten is going to be put in place. That was the foundation. If that's not the case, that's really a threshold question to engaging the public. If that's not going to happen, the result, at least in terms of the elementary schools, is going to change. So, mm-hmm. And the recommendation changes. So, I mean, you're right. There is some foundational work that the board has to do to decide from a programmatic standpoint how you're going to proceed. The other thing that I'll talk about is that we told you what you think should be done, but we didn't tell you how. And the implementation portion, there are a whole variety of scenarios as to how this thing could be rolled out. There is an implicit assumption is that if you're talking about $36 million, that automatically means a referendum. I would take issue with that. I think there are a lot of strategies to roll a program of this magnitude out without a referendum. And I think that topic is worthy of some study, either by a small group, by the board, the administration. I'm not suggesting who needs to do that necessarily, but I think there's a fruitful avenue there to the path to travel down, because while it is a lot of money, there are a number of implementation strategies, and that is the implementation piece. We stopped short of that because we didn't feel that was within our purview, at least as far as it is. But this same process could go one step farther, encompass the implementation by generating a series of alternatives with the solution or solutions that have been selected and carrying those forth with a similar kind of analysis. And then I think you've got something that you can then go to the public and say, this is what we think you should do, and here's how we think you should do it. Mm-hmm. And then you get your support. So there's a little bit of extra work to get to that point. And then I think you're ready to go out and talk to the world and see what they have to think.
Thank you, Tom. Who is?
Oh. Lori, and then behind.
And I just, mine is very short, just to remind you that that we were not selected. We selected ourselves. It was put out to the community, in it to not just school people, but everybody in the community, to volunteer their time to do it. This is what you got. Mm-hmm. So I just want to remind you. I know that your number was 300. I think that even in the task force, that we, while we are, there are some of us who are polar opposites, but we also figured out a way how to come together and work and to bring my ideas and this person's ideas together for the better good. So I know that we talked about, well, this may not be a good sample of our community. I think it is a good, probably 360, with, except for, I will say that one area is that we did not get anybody from the Glendale Heights, Lombard. Mm-hmm. I think we do have a Wheaton, but we didn't get that hard portion. So I would, for the board, to make sure that they include people in those areas as well, because they have a voice just like everyone else.
And I didn't mean this. I mean, I didn't mean that the task force wasn't a good sampling of the community. That's not what I meant. I just meant, you know, it's 30 people out of 18,000 voters,
right.
And I don't know. You know, Paul mentioned the 80% that don't have kids in the school. You know, maybe only 20% of the task force is made up of that 80%. I was just meaning that the opinions. You know, I don't know that we can say if the community as a whole would support this.
Right.
That's
and
all. I didn't mean to.
I wasn't suggesting that you were suggesting that.
So, sorry.
Scott. Come over here, then come
yeah.
Here.
Scott, then
yeah.
Willie, then.
I kind of like to echo what I said before, is that, you know, we're not, those solutions are kind of really broad strokes of solutions, right? So there's nowhere ready to go out the community and say, this is what we're doing, right?
Okay.
They were based on plans from an old architect that some of us would argue were horrible plans in the first place, but the concept of the plan is a good plan of adding rooms, right? So that was the concept. I think the other thing to take away from that report, more importantly than what we say you should do, is what we say you shouldn't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of those solutions, I think, would go a long way to be explained as to why as a community or as a task force, we think you should do those, right? Like splitting out the kids for early learning center because we want community schools, right? And I think as a community, people can get behind that, and that's something that you guys have as talking points. Then when you go out and have these discussions with us or without us, that, I mean, Spalding being off the table is a huge deal, right? I mean, that coming out of this is a game changer across the board. So, you know, and we can kind of justify why we think that for the community that is not a good solution. So that's kind of stuff I think you need to highlight during your other stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
Here we go.
Willie and then Barry. Willie, you had your hand up too.
I'm struggling trying to figure out if I really want to ask you all this question. Because as a taxpayer, my expectations is that you all are in a leadership position. So I'm sitting here wondering, philosophically only, would you be willing right now just to say yay or nay on all day kindergarten? Anybody want to do that? Philosophically.
For me personally, Willie, I don't know philosophically if that is a decision for the board, because my understanding is Dr. Corden can say we're having to do full day kindergarten tomorrow. My next question would be, where are you going to put those kids? Now, that is my decision as a facility and as a board conversation, but the way I understand that question is, Dr. Gordon could answer that question tonight and say, we're going to have full-day kindergarten, but they're all going to be in tents out on Main Street.
Yeah.
That's two different things.
Yeah. Going a little. The only thing that would be decided upon would be the funding of that.
Is the board willing, individually or as a group, to say, philosophically, we want to have full-day kindergarten? And if you're not, you know, whatever your answer is, it is. Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious about that. I'm more than just curious.
To answer your question, I don't think the board can say we want full day kindergarten. But if you're asking individual opinion, my opinion doesn't matter. My opinion doesn't matter until there's something in front of me that I can vote on, and then as a board, we vote on it. Okay? Mm-hmm. But if you're asking my opinion, I would say I went into it kind of thinking, I'm not sold on the whole full-day kindergarten thing, and now I've been convinced, and I'm convinced on more than one flavor. It isn't just about the educational impact on the kids. It is about keeping up with the other communities around us. I think that people can use anecdotal evidence all they want, and I do it too. I'm in the process of selling a house in Glen Ellyn. I'll tell you, education is talked about every single person who comes to my house. They want to know, what are the schools like? It's always funny if I happen to meet somebody and they say, can you tell me anything about the schools? And I always say, well, that's funny. I'm on the board, so let's talk about the schools. But it is right out there. It's tied to home values, so it's got an educational impact. And even if it isn't tied to everybody's home value, it comes up enough that people are considering it. And while it wasn't a big deal in the past, maybe, because it is being talked about so much in the press and there's so many things written about it, it is becoming a big deal now. And a few years from now, it may be a bigger deal.
Well, it makes me question that, or that's why I asked the question, where are you all at with it? Mm-hmm. And as well as where are you at with, how committed are you to getting rid of the affordables and handling it? Maybe that's the wrong approach to get down into it. But it's not committing to it. It's not asking you to vote. Just looking for if you have a yay or an A.
One of the things that concerned me about how this headed off is it's supposed to be a chance for the board to ask questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
And all of a sudden we've got a referendum committee starting and putting you guys in a strange spot. So really, the task force makes recommendations. Now it's our job as elected officials to do the dirty work, not to put it back on you guys and to say, hey, go out and sell this or go out and answer questions or whatever. Now, that may be something that as a board we discuss and decide, hey, we're going to move out, into the community. So I would say in my thought process, it's being included in the community survey. That will touch Carol Stream, that will touch all of us. Mm-hmm. So we can get that back. We'll get a bigger sampling size of it to Stephanie's point. Because you've asked me a question, so I'm kind of going on thought process. But when I ran, I said this many times. Full day kindergarten, I'm okay with it if the recommendation comes from the administration. What I'm not okay with is going out to an ed referendum. I'm not okay with the fee base because I believe that it's a public education. Everybody should have. Nobody should ever feel like they can't afford to send somebody because there are people in the middle that probably could afford to send them, but it's still a thing. So those would be, in terms of that, we have to prioritize within the budget if that's what it is, and you have to say this is more important than this is. And if it doesn't meet that threshold, then it doesn't meet that threshold. But that's up to the administration to make that determination. In terms of space, I asked Dr. Gordon this weekend. He got the information back to us. But it's interesting to me. I asked for data from census data in our buildings from 2006 and 2010. So this was just interesting. 2006, Lincoln School had 627 kids. It has 546 today. It has no more rooms than it did then. I mean, it's the same space. It has rooms, but they were portable. So what did we do when we had 627 kids? We have 546 kids. Franklin in 2006 had 627. Today has 558. I mean, so that's 80 plus, almost 70. A differential of less kids in these buildings than we had 10 years ago. Churchill is about the same in 06. Forest Glen is the outlier. Forest Glen actually has 57 more kids than it did in 06. Then I asked for 2010, and this is compared to our latest data. In 2010, Lincoln School had 644 kids in it. Now remember, it currently has 546. So we're talking about 100 kids we had in that building in 2010 that we don't have here today. So what are we doing within our buildings? So, for me, And again, Franklin's got a differential 610 to 558. Churchill had 700 kids in 2010. It has 638 today. So it's got that many less kids in it than it did 6 years ago. And again, Forest Glen's the other one, 613 to 554. So and then from a facility standpoint, from just my opinion, you know, and this is what, you know, and I was very transparent about this when I ran. Full day kindergarten, if it's paid for and prioritized, that's fine. And we do it within the existing facilities. And we had these kids here. We had 100 more kids at Lincoln School. So figure out a way to prioritize and figure this out. So that's where I stand just right now as far as this goes. So, and, you know, as far as the portables, I can't speak for anybody else, but I'm okay with getting rid of the portables at Hadley, and I ran on that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Barry, and then Liz.
So early in our discussions as a committee, as a task force, the question came up, what do we think the community would support? And I don't think we had, and there was no consensus among the committee about what the community would support, because we don't know. And we've had things that have gone out to the community before that the community didn't support. So I think we freed ourselves up and we said, we're not going to talk about what the community is going to support. We're, as a task force, going to say, what do we think we need for our schools? What are the teachers asking for? What are the principals asking for? Talking about wheelchairs in the basement. We said, we've got to fix problems. We said then, okay, we're going to give that back to the board and say, listen, you guys got to decide now. We have told you what we thought. You got to get rid of the portables. You got to give us more flexibility with the space at Hadley. You got to give us more flexible space in all the elementary schools. We have to find space for all day kindergarten. You got to figure out what you think you can get through. If at the end of the day you say, you know what, we don't support any new changes in all the elementary schools because the community is not going to support it, we say, well, we tried. There's really not much more we can do. But we did not limit ourselves to say, what can we support? How many, what can, do we need to raise property taxes? It was all focused on what do we need to do for the students.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. As I was looking through this, and as I've read through this, you know, and Liza, to your point, there are some things that occurred, and they're going to come back, you know, because when the board prior to us put these additions on, you know, if some of these things were so devastating that they needed to be bathrooms or places for teachers to go ahead and have, personal plan time or whatever, the board put additions on. They put huge ceilings on, so we paid in square footage to add ceiling space that really, for me, is completely useless because you can't do anything with it. You can't put kids there. You can't even hang things there. But we could, the board, if it was so bad, could have added a bathroom, could have added a staff lounge area. So, and then we say that you talk to teachers. So this would be a question: did you actually sit down and talk to teachers, or did you just have access to principals when you were actually going through the buildings? Did you actually talk to teachers? Did you guys do that, or were you meeting with principals? I mean, how did that work?
Because I talked to a lot of teachers.
Yeah. But formally or just or informally?
Well, they're all
who did the tour?
Teachers don't give us a data survey, Kurt. It's anecdotal information.
I'm asking you a question. I'm not arguing.
Principal
performance. So when you went through the building,
yes,
right? Were you led through by a teacher or did the principal take you through? And the concerns for the building during that tour, were they provided to you by the principals or were they provided to you by the teacher?
Both.
So the teachers during class time were talking to you, or how'd that work?
Both, in my case.
I went out most of the majority of the tours, and primarily a principal walks through the school because we were there during class hours, typically. Mm-hmm. But we were there over lunch, so many of the teachers were in their rooms, either eating lunch or preparing, doing their lesson plans. And we talked to those teachers informally at that time if they had time and were willing to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we have some other? I have a couple of questions from the board as well. Dean, do you have some questions?
I did too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we started down there. Maybe we should continue on in the way.
Can I answer Will's question?
Yeah.
I didn't get an answer.
Do you have something?
I just wanted to say, I guess I'm going to kind of, not to repeat myself, but agree with what Kurt said about the full-day kindergarten. I'm all for it if we can find a way to fund it within our budget. I think that's the big thing for me, is how are we going to fund the teachers. But, you know, the other thing I just want to add is, I don't think the parents out there who want full-day kindergarten are going to find a bigger advocate than myself. I could add Mr. Buckles to that, but when we did the first set of additions, I stood up at board meetings more than once and said, we should hold off on these additions, give it a year, let's figure out our plan for full-day kindergarten, figure out how we can incorporate that into these additions. You know, I've been saying that for years, and so it's really, really frustrating for me because I was advocating that we needed to figure that out before we even did the additions, and I was afraid what was circling with the board right at that time was we're going to need to build a new school, so we won't have to come back and do new additions. And here we are, our recommendation is to put on more additions, and I know we can't go back and change it, but I'm just trying to let everyone know I get the concern. I stood up I don't know how many times and said, we're going to be stuck. We're going to be in a huge pickle when in a couple years we figure out we do need full-day kindergarten. We're not going to be able to build the school, and we're going to have to put it in our schools after we are.
That's okay. I'm going forward.
I know. I'm just trying to explain.
Well, no, I get it. I understand what you're saying.
But given that history is important, because I do worry moving forward, I appreciate all the discrepancies in the school, things we need to address. Some of them I would debate when we talk about, you know, like certain things like bathrooms, things like that, we're not going to debate, but we talk about teacher collaboration space. I kind of wonder, well, what if the teachers done? I mean, have we been missing that in the history of time? Why all of a sudden now do we need teacher collaboration space? And I don't want to sit here and pick apart all the things, but if that may be something we can look at from the report, is what is a must have, what is a nice to have. There, I think we're going to have to go through this in detail. I don't think we can just say we want it all. And maybe even get creative with other solutions. You know, like at Hadley, for example, we need to address the size of the cafeteria. We need to address the music rooms. Can you square off this little quadrant here? Can you square it off and actually build more music rooms and leave the auditorium?
Solutioning a little bit, but I hear what you're saying.
So yeah. Are there other possible solutions, which is why I think which is accomplishing what the task force wants to accomplish, getting better space. These better spaces that they've outlined, maybe our new architect might have a different idea that would actually be a lot less expensive. So, And as far as the portables, I would agree that, you know, we need to, if they are not meant to be permanent, so long-term we need to figure out a way to get rid of the portables.
There's a few board members we haven't heard from yet. Can we hear from those first for the questions? And then, in the interest of time, I'm not looking to cut off conversation. I'm just saying it's 25 to 10. Can I have some consensus to let this go another 20 minutes? We can. Mm-hmm. We'll be bringing this conversation back. This is not the end of this conversation. So about 20 minutes and hear from a couple more.
I have one more thing, maybe we could add at the end. I do want to ask, just to bring up a point that Liza brought up, I want to know for this coming school year, this fall, looking at the enrollment report, it looks like, you know, our especially first grade at a couple of our schools is bumping up to five sections from four. Some of them it's not on the enrollment report, and I was questioning, should we be bumping up? But do we have issues in our schools right now that we need to be figuring out how we're going to address right now for the next school year? I think I'd like to identify those at some point as well. But that's not necessarily the task force. But
we got to get back to
that. They may have identified some things that we need to incorporate some short-term solutions.
That's the staffing conversation going on right now with Lori and the principals, and then now having had the report, that's something that Paul can bring to the table too, depending if there's a connection. Questions? Dean?
Well, if we're going to go back to where we started, where we're going to make some questions and statements, I'll take a few minutes to do this. Okay. One is, I know I did it before, and this is not politicking. I want to thank everybody who did this. I realize now it was 8 months. That's a lot to ask, but I'm going to tell you that no good deed goes unpunished. and I'm very serious about that. And Liza and Colleen and Elizabeth, thank you for standing up today and having an opinion. I'm going to encourage you to continue to have an opinion, and other people on this task force need to have an opinion. And I think that's very, very important. I hope that this task force doesn't devolve into a lot of things that I've seen, where people come with their position, they get together, they come to consensus, leave, and start forming groups to beat whatever it was that we decided. So if that's what you do, that's what you get, that's what you deserve. But I'll tell you, nothing ever happens the first time until somebody changes something. So if this community believes in this task force to say, well, we can't ask for more money, or we can't do this because people will never do this, that's just because it's never been done before. So what I'm wondering is, was there any conversation amongst any of you on what this next step was going to be? Because I'm fine looking at what you come back to us with and saying, hey, this is a good recommendation. This has been vetted out. It isn't selected. You know, we didn't select people to do this, and it's not representative. I think you had said that statistically. But you know what it is? If you drive it, it will happen. If you don't drive it, other people will drive it, and nothing will happen. And so it's on you guys, because we can vote something to do it, but unless the community comes together and educates those other members of the community, nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. And in America, if you say, do you want your taxes raised? People say, no. If that's your question you're asking, save yourself the time. It's not about whether someone wants their taxes raised. That is a ridiculous question. It's about, do you understand the problem? Somebody said tonight something about people not understanding what goes on in Glen Ellyn. I don't know who it was that said that, about people not being able to do this. Years ago, there was a thing called Supplies for Success that is still going on. I worked the booth at the farmer's market for this thing to collect money. People thought we were sending the money off to other communities to buy supplies for kids because they didn't think there was a single kid in Glen Ellyn who couldn't afford supplies. Then they find out we got 20% underneath the poverty level. People don't know that. We have to educate people if you feel passionate about it. So my question, and I think you raised your hand, is have you guys discussed what you do next?
I feel like when you want to put an addition on your house, the next thing is you need to go talk to the architect to see what's even possible. And I feel like we just hired a new architect. I'm not an architect. Drawing a picture of the school. But maybe they have some genius idea that we didn't think of. We're looking at old drawings from an old architect. I think now that we have a new architect, the next step is, this is what we need. What can we do with our space? Mm-hmm. I mean, if I wanted to move my laundry room upstairs, that's where I'd go next. Mm-hmm. I think that's the next logical thing. I don't know what we can do with our space. I'm an art teacher.
I'd also say, along with that, I think it was 2008 that we had a comprehensive space study done of all five schools. I think we need to revisit that. That's a small chunk of change. If they find space that maybe we didn't even see, we didn't even look at, that could be another option.
That was the Brain Spaces survey.
And that's
the elementary.
That's something we talked in our interview process with our new architect about reutilizing the space that we have today or that we're misusing.
Yeah. Other questions?
I would say a lot of the work is going to be on you because what I saw was, you know, I come home to my wife and we talk, and we always talk about how we have champagne taste, but if you're budget. I think that's a good analogy here because we saw all the deficiencies. We saw $35 or $36 million in things we'd like to do. Okay, theoretically. I don't know what the political will of the people of Glen Ellyn is. I think the survey will give us a good reference point. I'd like, in that survey, some sort of numbers to see, hey, would you pass a $8 million, $15 million, $20 million, $25 million, $35 million referendum, and this is what it'll do to an average house of $300,000 or $500,000 or whatever it is. And do it on a straight line basis. Don't do like the referendum in 99 or 97 or whatever it was. It was $50 the first year, but now it's like $300 on the tail end. So just do a straight line. Tell people what they're getting. Build trust in them. But I think it's on you guys to figure out the political or the economic will a bit, because I think there was big time consensus around replacing the portables in Hadley. I think when you got above that, there was less consensus, but I don't know what that consensus is. I felt that a one-time, all at once, $35.5 million referendum was not going to, it might have passed here, you know, 60-40 or something like that, but I'm not sure that it would pass. And that's your job to figure out what is passable. Because we didn't take everything into account. And I think that that's a big thing that you guys, as board members, need to check with your allies, your people around the community, and talk to them and say, you know, would you want to increase your taxes? I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. $200 a year to solve every solution, or $1,000 a year to solve every solution. And I don't know what those numbers are. I'm just talking that way. But
that's some of the outreach on the survey.
For you guys and for the architect to come up with more detailed plans.
Yeah.
There are pathways available to you that don't require the public at all.
Mm-hmm. We're aware of that.
Yeah.
We're aware.
And that's our, our new assistant superintendent, Tom, is going to be meeting with Paul about.
We talk about $35 million. $35 million costs you $2.5 million a year for 20 years.
Yeah.
$2.5 million dollars a year is about 5% of your current operating budget.
So other vehicles, yeah.
And to answer your question, too, we as a task force, again, did not design the schools. We did not put in nurses' stations and figure out how many bathrooms there ought to be. It was clear to me that what we did is we said there needs to be flexibility. You need to give the building leadership the responsibility to figure out what do they need. You want to have flexibility so you can add a section, like Paul talked to us about it. If you don't have that flexibility, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a teacher's lounge or whether it's a better space for the band, we talked about things that we would like to have, but we didn't ever get into the have to have. We just said there needs to be more flexibility, and we wanted to figure out a way to get better spaces.
Right.
So I think that what we would love to do is kick it to you to get some numbers from the architect, and then work with you to maybe educate the community about what these options are, and maybe not say, so how much are you willing to pay in taxes? Because the answer would be zero. The question would be, here's the problems and here's the solutions, and you know, here's what we're looking, you know, here's what we're looking to do. And you know, I think Bruce's little slip is very telling. I don't think the politics are any problem. I think politics is the problem. I think when we get hung up on the politics is when everything falls apart. I think worrying so much about the politics of this issue is where this whole thing crumbles. And I think that's when we're looking backwards and we're not looking forward and we're not solving anything, is when we're getting hung up on the politics of this instead of the actual solving the issue of this. And I understand that referendums are political. I understand taxes are political. I understand that you guys are voted officials. However, this is not a political issue. This is an actual facilities issue. This is a school issue. This is a kid issue. This is a facilities problem. These are problems that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So I think what we'd like to do as a committee is take it to you, take it to the new architect, and then we'll say, here's what we've got. You know, maybe the numbers will be smaller. Maybe they'll be more attainable. Maybe the space will be, some of the spaces at some of the schools will be able to be more appropriately used. Probably at Lincoln, there's some really good space that can be used. But Churchill, Forest Glen, probably not. There's going to need to be more space added on. But let's stop talking about what happened before. That already happened. Let's talk about what we're going to do next.
Liza, you have to talk about this stuff. Because the problem is, here's the problem. The problem is, and you can shake your head, but the problem is there are people in the community that are going to say this was really inefficient use of tax dollars, that we just built onto these schools and now we're doing it again. If we'd have done it all at one time, we'd have saved a lot of money. That is a problem. You can talk about politics. That is a problem you are going to face. And you can sit in a room and invite people to come in this community and tell them how great and all the deficiencies we have. The problem with that is most of them aren't going to listen. So you have to, this has been the problem around here, is we don't talk about what happened in the past to go ahead and make reconciliation with that to move forward. And it happens from people that haven't really been here that long. So they don't understand that. And to say educate the community is downplaying or you're talking down to people. They're educated. Trust me. They're smart people in this town. It's been said. So my opinion of it is let's stop using the term educate the community. You know, so because to me that's just not talking down to the community. So
I mean, my sense from the task force, and I'm just going to say a couple of things. I had a question and you answered it. My question was, did you have conversation about the value of educational facilities that educational programs drive? We talked a lot about programs drive your facility needs. And so even looking at, and I thought that they were interesting statistics to have, Kurt, the 2006, 2010, and now our current one. And when you look at those enrollment reports, what you don't see is also the variation to where we are now with the many different programs now that are being housed. That we lost X number of students out of Churchill because the whole program was moved out. Or we went to dual language, and so bilingual wasn't needed, but we needed rooms for those. So there's this, you know, each year represents another set of changes academically, programmatically. And so my sense is that you had value-based conversations around that. If I can get head nods. I mean,
yes.
That you did really have value-based conversations around it. Another reason that I like meetings on the other night is because I really would like to go to some village board meetings. We have right now the Glen Oak subdivision, 12 homes approved by the village of Glen Ellen, that is within District 41 boundaries. And if, say, there's four bedrooms in the home and, say, there's just two kids per home, that's 24 additional children, you know, as that subdivision gets up and running. Maybe it's 36 additional children. You know, so this is it's always a work in progress, you know, when I look at, you know, the growth of the community. And so, I appreciate the fact that you were looking at, you know, not the how, and which is easy to do. It's easy to get into the whole task and let's do this and put this there. But just the commitment each time to go back and say, why is this important? And if we don't center on the why, and this is, and I apologize, Kurt, for interrupting you, but I think when we say educate community, it's not because we think they're ignorant or naive. It's because there is so much complexity to this issue that, in fact, people need to be brought up to speed and the message needs to get said over and over and over again. And I'll go backwards for just one second. But in 2009-10, when the board at that time was talking about the master's facility plan, the very thing that you're talking about was option A, enlarge and reconfigure all five schools so they can accommodate their existing enrollments and better serve student needs. This is 2009. The board froze on that. Why? It was the trough of the recession, and heard over and over and over again, nothing's going to get passed. And so, you know, there is that reality in terms of the history of this, and I understand what, you know, you're saying, Kurt, but I think the education of this is so critical because previous boards, and I'm happy to be a scapegoat for any of this because I served on those since 2007, for any number of reasons, the very reason we're here right now where we are is because of those programmatic changes and the needs of the district changing so dramatically and the intention of wanting to have a better education. So when the board got to 2013 and we had like a plan, we looked at the referendums that were being going on around us, and there were quite a number. District 200 completely slammed on their referendum. And I remember doing some research on it, and that one of the key reasons was they had a reserve that many community members felt like should have been tapped first before community members were asked for more money. So that became a talking point for the board at that point, too. And then in the listening sessions that you ran, I heard that as a little bit of a theme. Use the money you have, which was then again moving to this decision around how do you get rid of portables? It's the age-old question. So I'm sorry I'm pontificating, but I just wanted to connect a couple of the dots because the thing that I love most about the message regardless of where you ended up on this, the 60-40 or what you go first or second, was this idea of make it happen. And I feel like for the first time in a long time, there is a common denominator around needs and interests. And if we can stick to those, then the board, and I agree with you, this is ours. We got to take this now and use our new set of brain back there, Cheryl, as our assistant, assistant superintendent for finance and facilities, and a brand new architect, clear set of eyes, brand new set of lens to this, and say, what do you think? And then, to Stephanie's point about identifying, kind of deducing those questions and those next steps, then we can, you know, bring this back to say, here's some next steps. Yeah. Thank
you. I'm just going to quickly say that I think what you will hear, and I'm going to speak partially to the task force, is that we're all passionate about what we've done for the last 9 months. Nobody's been 9 months. Every other week together, unless we're passionate about doing, being partners
right.
with the board and helping to be a voice within our community. I know that there are things that we all have asked for you to do, mm-hmm. but we're not just throwing it in your lap. We are coming back yeah. and saying, we will partner with you.
Right.
Maybe not all 21 to 25 of us at the same time, but we are willing to help share the message. Nobody spends 8 months doing this. And if it's a better way to share it to the community, some of us are new, some of us are old, but we're all a community. So we got to figure out how to come together, and I think the task force has done a good job of that. So I really want to make sure that I'm speaking that we will take the show on the road a little bit and partner with you to try to get it done.
Thank you.
If I can.
You're not going.
I think this is almost beyond the initial task force task. And I would love to give this all to you, Dr. Gordon. This is your district. This is your voice. And after the board comes up with, you know, and the community potential options and solutions, you have to use your district and your resources to sell this, to make it happen. And I would say that should all be happening within your corporate structure, so to speak, rather than this task force. Happy to help, but the unifying voice really, I think, is on your shoulders. That's just my opinion.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. We have about 5 minutes left.
Can I just
ask,
because I had some questions, so I might. One of the things I was curious about, Tom, and maybe this is to Tom and Lori, but why did you guys vote when you guys used risk factors in a formula? I mean, you seem like you were pretty database methodical.
We were on that question. Yeah. You know, at the end, I think we were just kind of, okay, we're all done with this. Is everybody on board with this thing? And it was just kind of like a final gut check poll. It did, as you can see, did not alter the result. The result from the analysis was what carried through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just a desire to kind of pull the group, see how far divided we were, if people were really on board, and you saw the results there. So I think in the final analysis, that vote did not change the outcome. It was not intended to. It was really designed to see, can we endorse the recommendation that's come through the process, and does that make sense? So that's all it was. It was almost kind of a spur of the thing, actually.
It was more just a show of hands to say,
to give people the
do we all agree with what we're writing down here? We're all here for 9 months. Did someone's voice not get heard, or were a lot of voices not heard because there were some strong voices that were overpowering the voices?
If we had gotten a result that was 80% against the process at 24, then I think that would have been cause for a lot of concern. Say, well, where did we go wrong? What happened here? But that wasn't the case. So that's all it was. It wasn't really designed to alter the outcome. It was really designed to see if everybody felt that it made sense in light of we've been through all this number crunching and everything else in the process. And you take a step back, take a deep breath, everybody on board with this, and clearly the answer was yes.
Mm-hmm.
One more question. And I appreciate that. So that answers that. The risk factors, how did you determine that?
We sat down and brainstorm really almost a whole session on what kinds of things could go beyond this. You know, for example, if your entire solution depends on a successful referendum, you don't have a successful referendum, boom, it's gone. So that's obviously a high risk factor, potentially, to a given solution that depends on that. If your solution doesn't depend on it, then you don't have to worry about that. So these are more subjective in nature. It's not as easily, although we did actually put some numbers to it, 1, 2, 3, we didn't show those in the report, but we actually did do kind of a numerical tally there, and it kind of made sense when we did that. But the real goal there was to try and identify forces that are external to the process that could come in and undermine the result. That's all that is. So we sat down and put our heads together to try and come up with a reasonable list there, and I think actually we ended up with more than I thought we would. Mm-hmm. I thought we only had just 2 or 3 or 4, but actually we ended up with 8. So that's how that came about.
Thanks. Those are my questions.
Well, it's getting close to 10. I want to, first of all, thank everybody for being here. You are not absolved of our partnership, and I really appreciate that language, so thank you very much. Yeah, were there any final comments? I think they're tired.
To talk about the task, to moving forward with the task force, one thought I had was, you know, would it make sense to form like a committee, maybe with a couple of people kind of from, you know, the differing, you know, the 60-40, like a smaller group that's willing to work with.
Yeah, I think that's part of our conversation, like those next steps.
Just an idea for us, like maybe kind of a smaller committee that can truly look at all these numbers and take some of it forward. And what Robert said, I think we do need to be careful moving forward, whatever happens in the future, talk about, you know, taking it on the road. I would caution having the facilities task force do that, because I think when people signed up for the facilities task force, they were signing up to evaluate, you know, the solutions. They weren't signing up to evaluate it and then sell whatever the solution is. So I think if people from the task force want to help do that, I think that needs to just be a separate entity.
Absolutely.
Because I could see there being concern for people saying, well, I was on the task force, but I didn't sign up for that. But
there's no arm twisting here.
Members of the task force want to do that, but I think we can just
Right. I think that the takeaway line, this was from the last meeting on the 25th, but also tonight, some subset of it was get to the finish line. I've written that down like 6 or 7 times in some iteration, because the other thing that I'm hearing from task force members, from all of you, is that please don't let this lay fallow. Please honor this work and think about the best way to move this forward, which I have heard every single board member commit to in some way, shape, or form. So I and trust to you, your work has been and will be honored in that way. This is a really important opportunity to move forward. Yeah.
So
you got the last comment.
Yeah. So as you guys move forward, right, and I'm guessing if you guys engage the architects and you need help with requirements gathering and hashing out those requirements, I will volunteer now and say that I'm available. I'm guessing other people from the task force would make themselves available. I don't know if you need all 25 people in the room. I think we could probably get away with a couple people and give you the gist of what we are looking for. But I think
thank you.
Get, during those requirements gathering, instead of you guys trying to interpret what we wrote down as an interpretation of our meetings, that might help you.
Very helpful, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Scott, and everybody.
Thank you, everybody. We're going to take a 5-minute break.
Yeah.
So we'll be reconvening at 10:05.
Nice to meet you. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back. Thank you for those of us who might still be watching us live stream. We took a brief break. Dean Elger has left the meeting. He had to leave. Work related.
Who did?
Dean.
Oh.
I believe. So, back to the next item, which is the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? No? Hearing none? May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item 1, finance, facilities, and operations, a school district payment order April 22nd, 2016 through May 4th, 2016, other matters, approval of board minutes, April 25th, 2016, regular meeting minutes, April 25th, 2016, closed session minutes.
Motion.
Mr. Ellis, Mr. Escalante the second. Okay. Roll call.
Wait, am I voting on?
Just
consent agenda.
Did you call my name?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Sorry.
Mrs. Clark? Mr. Elger? Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Butcher?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Superintendent recommendations. Personnel report. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the personnel report, which includes employment recommendations and administrative compensation as presented. That is the blue sheet on our desk. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Mr. Ellis?
Second.
Mr. Escalante. All right. Discussion. Okay. Just to get some context, there's employment recommendations on the first page. For this coming year, positions for 26-17 school year, and a position starting June 6th for technology staff during summer months and custodial staff during summer months, and then the other are school year positions. On page 2 is the administrator compensation, as I stated in the motion, which is increases for administrators this year. Average increase for administrators is 1.0%, as determined by Paul with his staff. Okay, discussion.
I'll just comment quick on the administrator compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows, essentially.
Stephanie, I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. The administrator compensation, it's a cost of living adjustment due to uncertainty with state funding, being conservative in how we're spending our money.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments? Any other discussion? You have a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Drew.
I'm looking on the second page, and there are 5 positions that didn't list TRS and the THIS.
Mm-hmm. The health. Mm-hmm.
Is that a reason why these weren't, or are these not included in that? Are they?
Those positions are not covered by TRS.
They are not. Okay.
IRM.
Okay. I just clarified that.
Good, thank you. All right, roll call.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, item 2, the 2016 capital bid, capital improvement bid, Hadley Roofing. They have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to reject all bids presented for the Hadley Roofing project.
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion?
We talked about this at the Finance Committee a bit, and based on the feedback that Dave Scarmato received from the, I'll call them the experts, they feel they've pinpointed, this is my review of his information,
mm-hmm.
that they've pinpointed, isolated the area where they believe the leak's coming from at Hadley, and that the best way to fix it is through what we call pinpoint tuck pointing.
Thank you, Joe.
I appreciate it, Joe.
it's fixing the brick, and we're going to get bids on that, it's much lower. What we did talk about, though, or at least I brought this up and I'll bring it up now, that this solution is something that makes sense based on the data we received back, but we have to monitor it closely, and I would expect Dave to do that, obviously, because when you have water damage, that could do a lot more damage than what we would look to spend to do the roof as originally planned. But I think this is the correct approach, and I'll be voting yes for this, rejecting this vote.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. Anything else? Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 3, the adoption of teacher resource if for literacy. At the last board meeting on April 25th, the administration and staff members presented information to the board on the Lucy Calkins Units of Study as a resource to literacy teachers. I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to purchase the Lucy Calkins Units of Study for teaching reading for grades K through 5 and Units of Study in Opinion, Narrative, and Information Writing for grades K through 6 in the amount of $67,741.54, which includes professional development costs as presented.
This has been in front of the board for...
Motion.
Oh, I apologize.
That's right.
Fell asleep there for 2 seconds. I'm back though with you.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Mr. Baczynski. Okay. Discussion.
Sorry.
That's right.
This both the literacy and the math have been in front of the board the previous two meetings. Feel strongly about both the resources. The Lucy Calkins teacher resource has been well vetted, and our teachers stand strongly behind it.
Yeah, just briefly, both were great presentations. The literacy presentation, when I went back to reread the data that they had collected, just reinforces both the tool and the fact that it supports what they're teaching. So I appreciated all the data that they gave us, so thank them for me. Thank you.
Paul, the measurement parameters will be out.
Yeah, we're going to show you some of that work on May 16th.
Okay.
Actually, yeah.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and go along with it.
Okay. Yeah, you will see those on May 16th.
I guess that was going to be my only comment about both the literacy and the math curriculum. I don't have any objections to them, but
the
I am concerned about the measurements. But we're going to see those.
You'll see. Yes.
Next week.
Yep.
Because I know.
And you'll have comment on them.
Like STEM scopes, I know last year are we ever going to circle back on that one? You know, satellite. But just
yeah,
in my mind,
saying.
I'm thinking of that. I'm like, I know STEM scopes last year, I had the same concern, and I went ahead and voted for it, but mm-hmm. we haven't seen that circle back. So
okay.
I'm a little nervous.
You'll see May 16th,
okay.
The draft of where we're at.
Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mr. Baczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 4, adoption of math curriculum. At the last board meeting, the administration staff and staff presented information to the board on the Eureka math curriculum for grade kindergarten through 5. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to purchase a Eureka math for grades K through 5 in the amount of $148,652.31, which include cost for professional development.
Motion.
Mr. Ellis? Mr. Baczynski, a second? Discussion.
Said it in the first piece. The math has been in front of you. Felt like the math team did a fantastic job. Really supportive of this math curriculum, a curriculum that teachers have been asking for, and our patience was to ensure that we chose a curriculum, a math curriculum that was truly aligned with the Common Core, and we found that in Eureka Math. And we will have math numbers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like it was ditto across the board. Yeah.
Most impressed with how many teachers that we had teachers from each grade level, at least two teachers per grade level to pilot this. I think that's important to put on the record. And then just some of the data that came out of one school, Churchill, pre and post, which I know is a big part of our the teaching practice and what a significant difference that was. So I want to thank again the teachers for coming that night to present.
The one thing that I could add to this, and I don't remember what was in the presentation, so I apologize, but I know you do hear from parents a lot, like, oh, we changed math again, we're using a new thing, and I don't know how to do this. You know, it keeps changing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with this, if we can make sure our communication for our parents is really succinct and proactive so they kind of know it, you know, just so they can be advocates and helping use it too, because I think there has been a lot of change and sometimes they don't know what jump is up.
We're going to be sending out some communication if the board approves the curriculum tonight, both math and literacy. We'll be sending out some information in the coming days.
All right, roll call.
Mr. Buchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Milton?
Yes. Last item five, Memorandum of Understanding, compensation for CIT members, Continuous Improvement Team. We have a motion to approve the Memorandum of Understanding, modifying the 2012-2016 Teachers Agreement as extended to 2018 regarding the compensation for the Continuous Improvement Team members as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
Board, I've sent some information on this MOU. Mm-hmm. It comes down to reducing the number of CIT meetings from 11 to 6 and then changing the compensation per $100 per meeting, therefore being $600 overall. It's not a change in the number of CIT members. They may be different members, but not the overall number of CIT GIA members or AFSCME members who would attend. Any questions or anything?
Well, the point in reviewing this was so that the work being done by the Continuous Improvement Team wasn't overlapping or lapping.
Correct.
The other teams, because CIT is that umbrella organization, so being able to lift up the work underneath it and then vet it appropriately, there was some,
we were on top of each other.
On top of each other, right. Which I think is glad they reflected on that.
Trying to get PDT moving forward, and then CIT is coming back in with another. We were literally on top of each other with our team, so we needed to kind of back off a little bit and allow PDT, Team 21, to do their work.
Yeah,
so thank you for that context.
Just curious, as far as the stipend for CIT meetings, is that comparable to other committees?
It's similar.
I don't know how long CIT
around just the compensation between
each. Part of Group 1, which includes their leadership, so CIT, DLP, PDT, and Team 21, all the same. Different than a math curriculum, which is an hourly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
Okay. All right, thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Buchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes.
No. Yes. Oh.
Just the effort of time.
Yeah. I already did that. Sorry, we're just
trying to
the agenda. Make sure we're on the same page. Okay.
Get things moving.
Items for consideration for future agendas. Just a quick view. We, in response to again some of the length of the meetings, springtime is always crazy busy, and so please send ideas for future agenda items, and we'll be really conscious of best placement for those. May not be the next meeting because we have those pretty well set, but any ideas people want to put out publicly.
Well, I know I brought it up earlier because I had questions about our enrollment report. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's, do I just email those questions to you, Paul, or...
Yes, if you could.
So.
And then we can bring them back for a discussion.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah, I don't know if we want to...
I can add that for the next one because of the facilities. We can add that because of the facilities conversation.
Yeah, and typically sometimes, too, you will respond to that in your update so that... I know that with things like that, the whole board takes a look at, we're able to see it. But your update can help to also answer some of those questions, too.
Can I ask something? I don't know if this falls under other, but it's next, so
let's roll.
But you, after public comment, you talked about work reaching out to parents and forming a task force.
For the special ed?
Special ed, I'm sorry. I
don't know if I said forming a task force, but I want to get... I want to get in front of them. I want to have that conversation and bring in Michelle, Karen, and others to kind of talk about it. How do we do that and get more people into the room to have that conversation?
So after you have those discussions,
kind of seeing what's that next step.
Then and I don't know if it should be an agenda item, but I think after you have those discussions,
I'll bring it back to the board.
Follow up publicly. Yes, I hear what you're saying, Joe.
One of your updates or something like that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
Another thing I was going to ask about during public participation from a couple of people is PBLs. Are we ever going to get a PBL update?
We're going to do the model update. We're hoping to somewhat align it with a long-range plan So after the May 16th, so we're looking at that May 25th okay. to do an agenda item on that. But trying to tie the two pieces together a little bit. So, yeah, we'll have that on the May 25th, I guess, which would be the next board meeting, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Just scary. 23rd? 23rd, sorry. May 23rd.
Sorry,
I get to see your lovely faces
next Monday.
Yes, on the 16th.
Weekly. 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 You cannot get enough of us.
You didn't see that thing you were playing the other day?
Yes.
First Monday, second Monday, third Monday.
All right, we're Duvall. Okay, let's roll.
All righty.
I want other.
Okay.
I don't know if it's really a future, so I was waiting for other.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about surveys. The five essential survey, are we doing that this year?
Not this year. It's in every other year okay. that we're required to do it, so it will be next year.
Okay.
So 2017.
And I can't remember, the timeline for the five essentials. Do you remember when they launched that? Because they're moving that up.
Literally.
Yeah. So it will be next December.
And why didn't we do it this year?
It's in every other year for us. That's the requirement, so we did it the prior year.
And then I know we had talked, I guess it's kind of timely, with special ed coming. We had talked mm-hmm. about special ed and ELL possibly putting questions on the school perception survey, and we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of dropped. That's how special ed ended up with a bucket for staff. But is there, just curious maybe for an update, and maybe you want to wait until we talk to the
okay.
parents, but I think, I know I had asked a while ago for some of those unique services,
mm-hmm.
special ed, ELL in particular, if we were going to reach out and do a survey. I know we...
We did the satisfaction survey, a special ed satisfaction survey that we received the data from.
Right. The problem with that is it's only going to parents who have kids who have IEPs.
Mm-hmm.
You're not reaching any parents whose children don't have IEPs, but they still may get...
services.
They still may get some sort of service, or they might have just issues in general,
okay.
anxiety or whatever. Maybe they want them to get services and they're having trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in some regard you have to. And that special ed survey, I mean, no offense, I think that was one that was kind of required. It's a needs assessment. It's not necessarily a satisfaction survey.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the questions, you know, one parent, I think, joked and said the questions are kind of like, is your child alive? Yes or no? I mean, it wasn't that bad, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a little harsh based on reading the data.
That was their example they used.
Yeah.
I'm just repeating it.
Okay.
That's a bad one. But it was kind of hard to... It was more like, you know, does your child receive mm-hmm. services based on their IEP? And you wouldn't necessarily argue with that. You would say yes, but... Maybe people have concerns about what services they are on the IEP. Maybe they're struggling with the team to get, you know.
How about I do this?
It was hard to capture the concerns. I guess.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. How about I do this? Set up the meeting with the parent group, and then from there, as Joe said, come back to the board and then make decisions about those next steps based off of that meeting. Try to get a better sense of what's going on. And then when would we launch that? Would it be next year, next early in the fall, or something along those lines? Does that sound
mm-hmm.
workable?
And then ELL was another one, but I don't know if that's a harder community to to survey.
Let me ask Katie.
She's there, but just I don't.
Okay.
I think she's doing some. She does some work on that with her dual language work. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have one other, and actually this went to my request I sent to Dean and for he and Stephanie to look at for policy committee meeting. And if you've been aware, there's been a lot of information lately started really in earnest with District 211 and some of their decisions at the high school level around issues of LGBT and transgender issues. There's been a lot of information in the newspapers around this. I went to a half-day seminar that was presented by an elementary school principal who was dealing with those issues at the elementary level and then also at the middle school level. And the National School Board Association just put out a new guide on these issues and some guidelines around human rights. So I would like to at least get the board thinking about those issues as they are much more in the public eye. And I know that you guys talked about it at the policy committee meeting, so I'll be interested to see a follow-up on that and what how our policies currently speak to that, as if they do. And if not, I want to be ahead of the curve on that if we can, which I think we should be. So
I'll wait to hear back from Dean on your conversation.
Okay.
I just want to put that out there. All right, upcoming meetings. May 16th, as Patrick just mentioned, the Board of Education special workshop at 6 p.m. Central Services Office, which is the board, Dr. Gordon, and his administrative team to now look for another time at the strategic priorities, embedding those as a group.
Can I have something about that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, are we targeting an end time?
I believe. If we can get 2 hours. Two good hours out of it, that would be great. I think the cabinet team would appreciate that too.
So 6 to 8, so I'll make that public?
Yeah.
Okay. 6 to 8 p.m. Central Services Office. Thank you, Joe. May 23rd. What?
Well, there's the info given to us that I have some questions that might help.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make it faster.
Yeah. Anything to make it faster.
May 23rd, 2016, Board of Education regular meeting, 7 p.m. Central Services Office. And then June 13th, 2016, Board of Education regular meeting, 7 p.m. Central Services Office, at which we will seat the new board member, and that will be Dean's final meeting.
And can I just make one more comment on the meeting that's coming up? Just for the record, I won't be here on the Monday the 23rd. I have a work. Out of town.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, thank you.
I will not be able to call.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
All right. Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session under Section 2C, Item 1, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employee or legal counsel for the public body, Section 2C, Item 2, collective negotiating matters or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, Section 2C, 8, security procedures, and Section 2C10, the placement of individual students in special education programs, and other matters relating to individual students. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Galante?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. All right, thank you very much.
We will not be taking
action when we return from closed session.